exclusively on the youngsters. Well, I think that the process may finally be underway after a truly pivotal court case in the United States of America found that Meta, the owner of Facebook and other platforms, and YouTube deliberately design addictive products. I want to dig into this with your help.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Defence Secretary says he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy warships available for immediate deployment. John Healy was asked for the figures during an interview here on LBC this morning, but struggled to answer.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government.
Shadow Communities Secretary Sir James Cleverly has called it a humiliating exchange. The government says it plans to spend £300 million on shipbuilding this year. The Prime Minister has denied there's a link between his former Chief of Staff's phone being stolen and the release of files about Lord Mandelson. Morgan McSweeney resigned last month after many blamed him for pushing the peer's appointment despite his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Opposition parties have raised concerns the theft means related messages could be lost. Sir Starmer has denied there's a conspiracy, though.
It was stolen, it was reported at the time, and the police have acknowledged and confirmed that that is what happened. And the idea that somehow everybody could have seen that sometime in the future there'd be a request for the phone is, to my mind, a little bit far-fetched.
Prince Harry and Meghan say a ruling on social media companies in the US is a victory for parents. Meta and Google have been ordered to pay £4.5 million in damages to a woman who said their platforms damaged her mental health. They both say they will appeal the decision. The UK is facing weaker economic growth and higher inflation because of the war in the Middle East. The OECD says the conflict could lead to global energy shortages and higher food prices as well. It expects UK inflation to average at 4% this year, up from the 2.5% forecast in its latest reports. And a study's found second-hand smoke exposure in Scotland is down by 96% since a ban came into force. It's been 20 years since Scotland became the first part of the UK to legislate against it. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 131 points at 9,974. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixed day across the UK with patchy cloud and rain in the northwest, staying dry elsewhere with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon. And selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. When I say the word addiction, what do you think of? Does anybody else think of Sam O'Maguire in Grange Hill back in the day? I think of Michael Douglas occasionally as well, because I think Michael Douglas was the first person I ever heard of who was diagnosed with or claiming to have a sex addiction. And that, to my younger ears, sounded a little bit fanciful. It sounded a little bit unlikely. I understand the issue a lot better now, of course. But the idea that you could be addicted to sex seemed strange to me when that phrase first appeared in the public vocabulary. It shouldn't have done, of course, because almost everything that is potentially addictive, possibly even everything that is potentially addictive. I'm trying to think. You can probably hear the wheels turning, can you? Or the cogs whirring. Is there anything that is potentially addictive that is not immediately addictive? When crack cocaine first appeared in this country, the reportage was, or the reputation was, that if you had one toke or puff or whatever the young people say of crack cocaine, then you would be in the throes, in the grip of a hideous and violent addiction within nanoseconds. I don't think that's true. This is one of the areas where I speak with no experience. But Billy Idol told me the other day. That's a phrase. Should we just pick that name up off the floor? There's a phrase I haven't. I don't think I've used that phrase enough in the last couple of weeks since I sat down with Billy Idol for a full disclosure episode. Billy Idol told me the other day that he used crack cocaine to get him off heroin, which was a very interesting insight into his past. But it was also an insight into the varying natures of addictive materials. He's using crack cocaine, which, of course, was always portrayed to us as the most addictive thing imaginable, to get off heroin, which takes us back to Zamo Maguire. It's almost like I planned this stuff in advance, isn't it? Just say no, kids. And then gambling is something that many of us find enjoyable without being remotely addicted to it. I think the last bet I placed was on Kidderminster Harriers to win the FA Trophy. A market so small that when I placed the bet, the odds actually shrunk in real time. I could see the odds come down on the computer screen. But everything that is addictive is pleasurable, right? I mean, you don't not enjoy something to the point where you do it again, and then you somehow cross a threshold, right? You somehow cross a Rubicon wherein you are no longer choosing to do it, you have to do it. The line between compulsion, if you like, compulsion and contentment. Oh, that's nice. We'll use that again. The line between contentment and compulsion is impossible to see. I guess you can, you realize fairly quickly, do you, when you're on the wrong side of it? But you don't really notice it approaching until it's too late. So what would you put? I mean, drugs, alcohol, good example. I think that if alcohol was invented now, many governments would probably prohibit it. Cannabis, I mean, technically not as addictive as other things in a chemical sense, but obviously in a behavioural sense. Sex can be, pornography can be addictive. Eating disorders often have addiction built into them, don't they? All sorts of things. I'll tell you somebody else I've been talking to a lot about this lately is Marcus Brigstock. Absolutely lovely man whose background, whose childhood, I had very little idea, was incredibly difficult. All sorts of addictions, many of which he's talked about before, but he's a really intelligent and insightful commentator on the nature of these conditions and, of course, the process of recovery and rehabilitation. But you can be addicted to pretty much anything that brings you pleasure. People can get addicted. If you're addicted to pornography, then in a sense you're addicted to masturbating, right? We know people no longer snigger at the idea of Michael Douglas being addicted to sex, because if you're addicted to sex, it can ruin your life. Obviously, it will ruin your relationships, but it can ruin your life as well. We've got images of drug addicts in bus shelters or whatever the cliche du jour may be, but there will also be people who are addicted to substances, whether they're illegal or legal, who you're at work with at the moment. Or who you are in your circle of friends or your family, you may know, you may not know. There is so much to addiction that is hard to grasp for those of us who have never been in its grip. And I think about that. I was trying to think this morning about the sorts of flirtations that you have with addiction, or what the foothills of addiction might look like. And in terms of technology, it's tricky. I don't want to make light of what we're going to talk about shortly, but I think to some of those games that really were engineered to make it almost impossible to turn off. If you got caught up in Candy Crush, for example, back in the day, then you'll know that you were playing it in ways that were just profoundly and supremely unhealthy. Right, I'll just have one more go. 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 And you know, I go back far enough. Tetris was but not like addictive. And then I remember an old pal of mine who's not with us anymore. And he was a marketing guru. He was one of the absolute geniuses of the marketing world. He was in the business of marketing television stations. And I remember him, I can even remember where we were sitting. We were by the river in London and just sitting on a bench having a chat. And he was talking to me about TikTok. And he was trying to convey to me how utterly extraordinary he found it. Now, at the time, I probably had a million followers on Twitter, so I'm not one of those people in their 50s who either has to admit ignorance or who feigns it for performative reasons. I got on Facebook very early. I remember getting on Facebook not long after I started this job, actually, and I used it both for my personal life and, back in the day, I think I had a page for my professional life as well. And I understood what Facebook was, and I understood what Twitter was, and I spent too much time on Twitter, but never in a way that felt addictive, except when I kind of caught myself once. I told you this, didn't I? I caught myself once checking Twitter over my little girl's head while I was reading her a bedtime story. And that's when I decided to leave my phone downstairs at bedtime story. You don't know it's happening until it's happened. And what my mate said to me was he'd just downloaded TikTok and he couldn't believe how quickly it knew him. And I remember being a bit confused by what he meant. And he explained that he couldn't believe, like, the way in which it was counting nanoseconds. So putting in front of him clip after clip after clip after clip and analysing what he enjoyed simply by counting and therefore sending him, working out with incredible sophistication very, very quickly what was going to keep his eyeballs on that screen for longer. In other words, it was engineered to create addiction. Now, would you have used that word a year ago to describe social media use? We're looking today at Meta and we're looking at YouTube because they are at the center of a potentially hugely important case in the United States of America. $4.2 million and for the first company, Meta, which is Facebook's owner, and YouTube $1.8 million for a young user who ended up with mental health distress as a consequence of her own addiction that had been carefully engineered or fomented, the court found, by these technologies, by the way that I'm describing them. And that is not the conversation we usually have about social media. We normally have conversations about the content, the quality, if you like, of the content, for a better word, or the absence of quality, the corrupting nature, the pornography, the sex abuse images, the violence, the racism, the way in which you are exposed to things that would once have been confined to the shadows. And that's obviously a huge issue and a huge problem, but it's not the problem that this court case has been looking at. Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube being designed to create the sort of addiction that will lead inexorably in many, 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 many cases, I mean millions really, to anxiety and depression. And that is the point, the way that addiction is deliberately pursued, deliberately fostered, deliberately engendered. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want, because we've done this with many other things, you know. I think we've done it with gambling. But the line between using something too much, and being genuinely addicted to something. Because I think of my late friend often when conversations like this are bubbling under the surface. Because he was trying to convey to me a sense of urgency. He was trying to convey to me, because we had children of the same age, he was trying to convey to me a mission state. This is serious, mate. I do this for a living. You know, I am in the business of trying to get eyeballs on things. I am a professional marketer, and he was marketeer, and he was at the very, very top of his profession, and he said, I have never seen anything like this. Because the business of marketing and advertising is getting eyeballs on product, right? And he was saying, I've never seen anything like this. I downloaded it because the kids are, you know, sharing, I think was twerking a thing at the time. I can't remember what it was, but there was some little dance that they were all doing. And it all seemed so utterly harmless, even perhaps less than harmless, even charming. You know, they're looking at a friend of mine upstairs said just now on the way down, I said, what's the last thing you watched on Instagram? He said, oh, I watched a Labrador teaching a puppy to swim. Now, whoever would think that that was a problem? I was watching a Labrador teaching a puppy to swim. That's just lovely, right? How many hours were you watching it for? Well, 77, non-stop. And so, do you see what I mean? It's not about... So this is why I mentioned sex addiction. Because we struggle with the idea that something that doesn't feel harmful, something that actually feels generally rather pleasant, can be dangerous. How can sex be dangerous if it's all consensual? Well, because you're addicted to it, and you will pursue your addiction to the detriment of every other aspect of your life. Most obviously, your relationships, in this case, and your mental health. So, addiction, as opposed to usage, or even over-usage, is at the very, very heart of this case. And I think that we are knocking now upon the door of something really significant. I'm not claiming... Listen, you know how blimmin' conceited I am. If I'm claiming credit for spotting something early, I'll jolly well tell you. I don't think anybody can claim the credit for spotting this early, because it became crystal clear some time ago that the only circumstances in which these companies were going to behave responsibly would be if they were compelled to. They are not going to do it voluntarily. They're either going to do it because of vibes, i.e. society is demanding it of them, and they feel the need to, if you like, bend the knee to social sensibilities, and therefore they will make some of the right noises or do some of the right things. It's often the way with good policy, with goodness, human goodness, in the hands of big business, is only ever a commercial decision, with a few wonderful examples. Another full disclosure. So that's Billy Idol, which is a couple of weeks ago. Marcus Brigstocke, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And Mark Constantine, the owner of Lush, who the interview that I did with him really stays with me, because whenever I say something about big businesses, there are exceptions to the rules that I share with you. Mark is one of them. And the Timpson Empire is another one. Businessmen who do good things and still make good profits. The idea that you can't make good profits without abandoning good things is given the lie by businessmen and businesswomen like those two. But the point being that they won't do it, the tech companies, unless either society makes not doing it unattractive. So think of diversity and inclusion, goodness, human goodness, trying to increase equality, trying to increase fairness. Turns out that if you've got somebody in the White House who doesn't like equality or fairness, then all of these companies that claim to care passionately about diversity, equality and inclusion will just abandon it in a nanosecond, because they can keep the money for themselves if they're not spending it on schemes designed to increase fairness and equality. So they don't do this stuff voluntarily, except with a few glorious exceptions. They will only ever do it under duress, either social duress or legal duress. And legal duress quickly becomes financial duress. So they will only do it if it's going to cost them more not to do it than it is to carry on doing it. And these companies are beyond big. They are bigger than countries. They are bigger than traditional manufacturing companies. And the commodity is your attention. That is what they want from you. They want your attention, and they sell your attention to the highest bidder. So if I was in the business of selling your attention to the highest bidder, what would I get up every morning to do? To harvest as much of your attention as I possibly can. And at what point do I care about whether it's doing you any harm or any good? Spoiler alert, never. Spoiler alert, never. I never care about whether it's doing you any harm or any good. I'm just counting the eyeballs, and I'm counting the hours. And I'm converting the eyeballs, multiplied by the hours, into dollars. Into pounds, shilling and pence. So at what point do I start thinking, oh, hang on a minute, this is a bit unhealthy. There's some kids over there who are depressed. There's some humans over there who are addicted. Never. It will only change, and this is why, just to do this thing I've started doing quite a lot lately, to knit everything together, this is why the rampant free market so-called think tanks are so dangerous because they work for, without telling you who pays their wages, companies dedicated to pursuing profit to the exclusion of all else. You can see what happens when companies are taken over by people dedicated exclusively to pursuing profit. If you need examples, have a look at the water companies in this country and have a look at the vets on your local high street. They've gone in the space of our lifetimes from being competent and contributors to society to being money farms, trying to rinse as much cash as they possibly can out of you for your pet's health or for the water that they have a monopoly over supplying. That's what happens when these people move into positions that they shouldn't be allowed to move into. So it's the same principle in play here, and the idea that they're ever going to do what's right because it's right is fanciful. Despite, of course, all the media and political efforts put into shilling for them. So Meta, YouTube, TikTok and Snap, which owns Snapchat, have been found to be the cause of harm to a young user because their design features are addictive and the addiction led to mental health distress. Because the other scary bit about this is you're never too young. They will come for you now. Because why wouldn't you? If my job is to get as much eyeballs and as much attention as I can on this screen, I don't care how old you are. I can sell your attention to the highest bidder, even if you're two. You're 3 years old, and you've already got something I want. You've got attention, and I want it, because I can sell it and make money out of it. And remember, all of these men were sitting behind Donald Trump at the inauguration for his second term as president. All of them. So, I don't know where this needs to go. I don't think there are people sitting here going, well, ooh, crikey, I don't know much about this. What's he on about? This sounds interesting. Well, I hope it sounds interesting. But I don't think that's true. Younger people have started eschewing these platforms. They've literally, like, giving up alcohol or giving up drugs or giving up caffeine. They've started saying, actually, this is doing me more harm than good. I think it's an all or nothing. That's a big thing about addiction, isn't it? Is that the only way you can recover from an addiction is to knock it on the head entirely. You can't sort of go from being addicted to being a moderate user of something with most substances. But you've got younger people doing it. There's nobody. I mean, your granny's on Facebook. But is she addicted to it? So it's not about the content. It could be fluffy kittens. But if you're watching 18 hours a day of fluffy kittens, you've got a blooming problem, right? Except from the point of view of the platform that's putting up the pictures of fluffy kittens, because from their point of view, you're a dream come true. Your attention has been harvested. Your attention has been secured. So what I want you to do for me is describe the line. The line. Because everybody uses it. Don't at me to tell me that you don't. I don't want to be rude, but that's just boring in the context of the conversation that we're currently having. Of course, some people don't use social media. Well done, have a biscuit. But in the context of everybody else who uses it in various ways, shape or form, where is the line between not having a problem and having a problem? 0345 6060973. You can tell me because you've crossed it, or you can tell me because you've watched people cross it, or you can tell me because you've been paying more attention to this stuff than other people have. Where is the line between not having a problem and having a problem? Where is the line between using something pleasurably and being addicted to it? And I want to talk about social media. We've done it with drugs, we've done it with alcohol, we've done it with gambling, I think. I can't remember the last thing we did it with, but the difference between having a problem, I mean depression, which isn't an addiction, but the difference between being sad and being depressed is crucial to understanding the broader issue. So the difference between using something, even using it by your own admission a bit too much, and being addicted to it. This is how they went after big tobacco, by the way, in the last century. Personal liability. Thousands of lawsuits now being filed by teenagers. School districts and state attorneys across the United States of America have Meta, YouTube, TikTok and Snap in their sights. And crucial to this entire process is addiction, the very nature of addiction. And that's why I started talking about Michael Douglas and Billy Idol and Zamo Maguire from Grange Hill, if you were wondering. back in the day. Look it up, kids. Because that's the bit that nobody nails. The difference between using something and being addicted to it. When it is social media, what's the difference? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. And fair play to everyone who thinks they're addicted to my monologues. They just keep getting longer and longer.
LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and help support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
Next, Dad?
Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. Even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder Which have recommended us 8 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
It's over.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
26 minutes after 10, and don't think that what you have to say isn't interesting, because for people who are not addicted, some will be wondering whether they are or not, but you know what it is to be addicted to social media, right? And nobody else does. That's how you need to think of it. It might be your world and one that you think everybody understands and recognises, but trust me, we don't. I do not know the difference between using something too much and having an actual addiction. Not when it comes to social media. I can work it out in other contexts, but I want your help in working it out in this one. Helen is in Manchester. Helen, what would you like to say?
Morning, Dave.
Hello, Helen.
I actually gave up as much social media as I possibly could. I run my own business, so there's a few bits that I still have to use.
Right.
But I gave up most of it over 5 years ago, but I didn't intend to give it up when I first started giving it up.
Yeah, go on.
I gave it up because I realised when I tried to temporarily stop using it, how addicted I really was. And if you had asked me beforehand, no way would I have said I was addicted to social media.
What made you realise that you were?
I had a bad day on Facebook.
Yeah.
And had decided that I'd basically put one post out and just got loads of people giving their two pence worth, which is not what I asked for.
Yeah.
And then I put a second post out and just said, this isn't really what I was asking about. Like, I've actually found this a bit upsetting. I'm not going to use social media. And I remember it was in January and I said, I'm going to do no Facebook till the end of February. And yeah, that was January 2021.
Okay.
And I've never gone back to it since. Because within that first week, the amount of times that I reach for my phone to check my Facebook or check my notifications without thinking about it, it was really quite scary. I could be sitting actually watching maybe a film or doing something that I was actually enjoying, that I was actually engaged in, and my body would reach for my phone, my hand would reach out and take hold of my phone without ever thinking about the process that I was engaging in.
A huge number of people listening to this, I would say a large majority of people listening to this, do what you've just described. The film is a wonderful example. I went to see Project Hail Mary the other night with my youngest, and I left my phone at home by accident. It's a cracking film, by the way. I left my phone at home by accident, and I noticed, because I don't really check my phone if I'm in the cinema, but I'm conscious that it's in my pocket, and I can feel it. And I said to my youngest, oh, crikey, I left my phone at home. And she said, I always leave my phone at home when we go to the cinema. So almost everybody listening to this will recognise what you've just described, and the massive majority of them do not think they're addicted.
I wouldn't have said I was addicted.
But you would now?
Now I would, because I recognise the difference between now when I pick up my phone to check something, I've thought about that before I do it. I don't even just pick up my phone just because it dings or because I get a message. There are certain I run my own business, and my customers know you message me after a certain time at night, you're not going to get a reply, because after 9 o'clock at night, I don't look at my phone.
So you're, I mean, this is helpful, because you're describing the question of control. Who controls who? Does the phone control you, or do you control the phone? And you went for years with the phone controlling you, and now you control the phone. So you can't knock it on the head entirely. Most people can't. But
My mantra is that I am not a slave to the dinger.
I quite like that.
Just because my phone dings doesn't mean that I have to pick it up.
No, I get that as well. I mean, that's also work-life balance. Again, it's quite nuanced, isn't it? There's quite a lot of plate spinning here. But what damage was it doing to you in terms of your mental health or in terms of your inner or your outer life? So do you know what I mean? With most addictions, you can say, well, I've lost all my money, or my wife's left me, or my husband's left me, or I've had to sell the car, or I wake up in a puddle of my own vomit every morning. I mean, you know, addiction, the negative impacts of addiction are quite easy to track in many, many cases. How would you track them in this one?
I think I'm sorry, somebody's literally just drove past and taken my wing mirror off while I've been talking to you.
You are. Do you want to crack on? I mean, crikey, that's the price of addiction to this, isn't it? Yeah, are you serious? Well, look, I'll leave you to it, shall I?
I was parked.
Oh, that's outrageous. I don't know what to say. That's never happened to me before, and I've been doing this for 22 years. It's also time for the news. Helen, take care. Anyone got a spare... What do you drive, Helen?
A Ford Transit Connect.
Anyone got a spare wing mirror for a Ford Transit Connect in the Manchester area? Please get in touch via all the usual means, but try not to clog up my phone lines. Here's Lottie Morley with your headlines.
The Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure after struggling to say how many UK warships there are here on LBC. John Healey says he's not happy with the number of Royal Navy ships available for immediate deployment. The government plans to spend £300 million on building more this year. Donald Trump has taken another swipe at his allies, saying NATO nations have done absolutely nothing to help with Iran. The US president says he's ready to unleash hell if Iran doesn't accept defeat in the conflict there. And figures show there were sharp falls in the number of sewage spills from storm overflow drains last year. The Environment Agency says there were still nearly 300,000 incidents in 2025, though. LBC weather, cloudy in the north and west this afternoon, staying dry and bright in the south with a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature, or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
The famous five are on the train to Cardiff, planning their Welsh adventure. Did you know Wales is absolutely bursting with myths and legends, says Anne? And number one on my list is the legend of the Red Dragon. Then tomorrow we'll look for the legendary fairies of Penold Castle, adds Dick. But first, let's try the legendary Welsh cakes, quips George. Yes, let's start there, laughs Anne. Great Western Railway. Legendary adventures start here.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams, please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online, or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
Dread.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
33 minutes after 10 is the time. It's technological addiction. We are not talking about the nature of the content today. We will and we have and we do. But this is almost as if the content doesn't matter. So young children are not looking at hideously harmful content. exclusively. Of course, some are, and that's terrible and significant and serious and desperately important. But today's conversation is not about them. Today's conversation is about people, and not just children, who are looking at stuff that is innocuous but addictive. Because it's the platform and the technology and the way that it is engineered that is addictive. So I joke with you about this and talk about my... I've got really wholesome tastes. Who knew, eh? If I could meet, I don't know, 14-year-old me now and talk about how wholesome my tastes and my enthusiasms are, I'm not sure he'd believe me. But my algorithms serve up things like bird watching and ping pong clips, like amazing table tennis feats and moments. I went through a brief phase of getting a lot of content about people placing booby-trapped parcels on their front step so that thieves would be would receive their comeuppance and get covered in bright green powder when they tried to steal it, and it kind of blew up in their arms. But I went off that fairly quickly because it A, became cruel, and B, began to look like AI. So I have become very wholesome in middle age, much to my own surprise. But as a younger person, I was always teetering upon the edge of addiction. Video games, I could spend hours, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, even silly ones. You know, like silly games that you just want to do slightly better, or you just want to go faster. But and they were engineered to do that. State corporate harm maximization, the phrase that psychologists use to describe those fixed odds betting terminals in shops that are so carefully engineered to keep you putting money in. Now, instead of putting money in, think about an attention as a coin. Your attention is a coin, and they want you to keep putting your attention in that slot. And the slot is Facebook or YouTube or Snapchat. How do you know it's an addiction, is the question we're trying to nail down today. Sue Starmer is in Watford. Sue Starmer, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Good to talk to you again. So you asked about what the line is, and what came to mind, because I have a fascination on this subject, so is when we start to cut out other things that are important in our life.
Yeah.
So I saw a study done on rats. And when you put a rat in a cage with nothing in it, and there's a maze, and you put a bowl of sugar water at the end, it will find its way to that sugar water. And then when you put a rat in a cage full of other things with other rats and other toys, other food, other things, and the same bowl of water with sugars in the same place, it doesn't automatically go there because it's interacting with other things in the cage. So this describes the healthy line, where when we're on social media and we're not doing other things, and then that starts to weigh us down because we're not organizing things for our kids or for our family or for ourselves, and we start to feel like, oh, I'm a terrible person. That it's multi-layered, I suppose, is the point I'm trying to make.
No, this is, everything is, isn't it? I'm being a little bit crass, probably looking for a Rosetta Stone that will unlock the whole issue, because, I mean, most of us will be doing things that we could be. I mean, you're probably too young to remember Why Don't You on the television, but it was about why don't you do something less boring instead, and it was hilarious because it was a television program telling you to do something less boring instead than watching television. So whatever you're doing, yeah, most of the time you could be doing something more nourishing, couldn't you? You could be doing something more wholesome, you could be doing something more constructive. But sometimes we like just to stare at flickering lights, or we like to do things that have absolutely no benefit whatsoever. Is we like to eat junk food sometimes, even though we know that we should be eating healthier food. And that's not an addiction. You know, I go for a cheeseburger once a month. I'm not addicted to junk food, but whenever I have a cheeseburger, I could obviously be having a salad instead, but I'm not. So how do you know the line?
So I'm sorry to bring in Buddhism here, but I guess that's my background.
Shouldn't apologize for that. until afterwards, when I've decided it was a pointless intervention, and then you can let me go on.
Yeah, that's
tell
right,
me.
Yeah. Well, the Buddhist point of view is that the main addiction is to ourself. So whatever our self-image is or our self-belief is, we're addicted to that. And it could be positive or it could be negative. And we're always driven to reinforce what we think about ourselves. And this is where it becomes really multi-layered and not very simple at all, because who knows what we really think about ourselves. And this starts to develop as we become adults, and that feeling of I'm a bad person or I have to be the best person can be the driving factor, but it could be other things as well.
So if you start to hate yourself because of the amount of time you're spending on social media, you are addicted.
Yeah, I think it starts even before that. I think if we have encountered difficulties, challenges, and we feel overwhelmed, the phone now and social media is a great distraction, and we feel better about ourselves because we're not in touch with that initial feeling of, oh, I got that wrong. Look at this reel or look at this short. Oh, that's fun. Oh, that's interesting. And then who knows how many hours could go by. But I do work with clients who spend a lot of time on their phone, and then they end up feeling really bad about themselves because they neglected other important things that, you know, they could have done in that time. So it's almost like a double whammy of suffering on top of suffering and a vicious cycle.
So most people listening to this who have got a problem, who are addicted, would probably know.
Yeah, probably.
Do you think?
That's
interesting.
And this is, you know, in some places where they put people in solitary confinement, that's a form of torture, because one of the things that's very hard to do is to be with ourselves. And I wonder when people are on their phones and they're not connecting, because I spend a lot of time online in doing stuff with online communities, and I get a lot of enjoyment from that.
But that's not what we're talking. I mean, that's a bit like being addicted to books. I'm addicted to Shakespeare. Would that ever be a problem? Answer, yes. If you're actually neglecting important areas of your life to read books, then your addiction is a problem, weirdly, because books are generally seen as an unalloyed good. But your involvement in online communities is not problematic until it is problematic. And the only person who will feel when it's become problematic is you.
Mm-hmm. And it probably does have something to do with other people in our lives that feel that those books are taking them away from that relationship.
Yeah. Ah, well then, oh God Lord, because that's another dimension now, isn't it? In that sometimes your life might be so unbearable that you relish the distraction that then becomes addictive, but the distraction might still be preferable to the reality for you. So the more traumatized or horrible your life is, the more susceptible you become to the addiction, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the question, I suppose, is what we're examining. Yeah,
can you tell? I think I remember from previous conversation that you're a psychotherapist.
Yes.
Can you tell if I come to see you, what would you need to know in order to tell me that I've probably got an addiction or that I have got an addiction to social media? What would you be looking for?
So, again, I think it's multi-layered.
Of course it is, but that's why I'm very unfairly asking you to diagnose in the space of a sort of single consultation. I haven't, for the record. I've got a whole heap of problems, but this ain't one.
So because the Buddhist starting point would be that we're all addicted, it's not a problem being addicted. But I suppose we wouldn't diagnose. That's the first point.
Okay.
Is that we all suffer. Suffering is part of the world. We'll encounter difficulties. That's not the problem. It's when our habit patterns start to harm ourselves or others. That's when we can start looking at, okay, what is the difficulty?
Yeah. So in an ideal world, would you be doing this? No, I wouldn't, but I can't stop doing it. That's a really helpful starting point, actually. Thank you. Would I be doing this? If I was in complete control of my life, would I be doing this? Would I be, to take back to other addictions, would I have a drink tonight? If I was in complete control of my life, would I rather wake up tomorrow morning clear-eyed and completely on the ball? Or would I rather wake up tomorrow morning feeling a little bit woozy because I'd had a lovely session last night? If I was in complete control of my life, would I have a drink tonight? If I was in complete control of my life, would I pursue that woman? This is taking it back to sex addiction. If I was in complete, how am I going to feel after I've completed the thing that I'm trying to do? Am I going to feel good? I've done it, or am I going to feel absolutely rotten, self-loathing? There's my phone sitting on the arm of the chair. I'm going to pick it up. 2 hours later, am I going to think, excellent, I'm so glad I did that? Or am I going to think, you absolute wombat, you've just wasted another 2 hours of your life. You were supposed to be doing your homework. You were supposed to be painting the fence. You were supposed to be, I don't know, getting a new wing mirror for your Ford Transit Connect, which, by the way, is now under control, so don't worry about that on Helen's behalf. At 10:45 is the time, the line between. And now I'm wondering how many people listening to this right now are thinking, oh, yeah, yeah, I got a problem. I didn't think I had a problem, but I do. Is that you?
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I suspect there might be a lot of other people who bring forward claims of not dissimilar nature to try and show, too, that these social media sites, the manner in which they are delivered to you, inspires a behaviour that could lead to some very, very disastrous consequences for you. The door is now open to a court deciding that, yes, in this 20-year-old woman's case, was true. The use of social media early made her addicted and her depression worse.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved legs, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Imagine you. You in a nice comfy seat, with your hands behind your head, taking in the views, instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
Do you remember, was it bananas? Do you remember bananas on Facebook? You throw a banana at someone. You could poke people, do you remember that? You could throw a banana at people. And you got more engagement if you could throw a banana than you would if you would poke. So they realised, back in the day, Marcus Brigstocke was explaining this to me when we recorded Full Disclosure the other day. So he's fascinated by it. As we all should be, just constantly honing the algorithm or honing the technology, engineering the software to maximise the amount of time we spend looking at it. Because if a product is free, you are the product. If a product is free, your attention is the commodity. You are being sold to, oh, not necessarily the highest bidder, but to any bidder at all. And that is why it is a business imperative to create addiction. And I like that word. It's a commercial imperative to create addiction. Because according to what metric are you being paid? Whether you're the CEO or whether you're a relatively lowly software engineer, how do they decide whether you're doing your job well or not? Answer, by counting the hours spent looking at your product. And that is you. You are looking at the product, and their success is gauged by how long you spend looking at it. So if you said to them, would you like to create addicts? I think about a drug dealer, right? I should probably apologise to people for whom this is bleeding obvious. But it isn't to me. And I spend quite a lot of time worrying about and wondering about this stuff. Think about a drug dealer. What does a drug dealer want? What does a drug dealer want? Drug dealers want addicts. Do you think the average drug dealer cares about where the average drug addict gets their money from to buy their drugs? Do you think the average drug... And the higher up the chain you go, the less they care. Do you think that they look at people who are addicted to drugs and think, oh, we should probably help them come off it now? Well, I wonder if we can find a drug that is not actually as damaging or as dangerous or as addictive. Oh, look at that poor fella over there. I've been selling him heroin now for 5 years and look at the state of him. What can we do to help? How can we make them less addicted? So if you accept that these technologies are addictive and that the world is currently run by dealers in addiction and that your attention is their reward, everything begins to make rather more sense. And the rather lazy idea I used to have, which was this has now gone too far and it is too big, you can never get this genie back in the bottle, I think I probably said. It's one of my favourite phrases. I just get over yourself. We have to. Because the genie is killing. The genie is enslaving us and our children. We have to get the genie back. I don't care how big the genie is. We've got to get the genie back in the bottle. And crucial to making everybody understand the urgency of that mission is understanding the nature of addiction. And crucial to understanding the nature of addiction is understanding the difference between using and addiction. 0345 600 6093 is the number you need if you can help us understand that crucial difference. And I like the self-loathing element of it. I think most people can probably get their heads around, oh, I'm never going to drink again. Most people can probably get their heads around the idea of, if you were in genuine control of your life, would you do that thing? Would you check that phone? Would you pour that drink? Would you roll that joint? Would you seduce that man? Whatever it may be, are you going to feel good afterwards? 12 hours afterwards, not 12 minutes, but 12 hours. And if you know that you won't, but you can't help doing it, then you may have a problem. And you may never have thought, when we were kids and we were playing Snake on our Nokias, you may never have thought that this thing in your hand would be the agent of addiction. But who would really argue with that now? You're welcome to try, by the way. I'm not being facetious. If you do think this is a fuss about, if not nothing, then something considerably less significant than the rest of us are contending, then do feel free to get in touch. That's always the case, by the way, on this program. I haven't had enough calls, really, trying to defend Donald Trump's position or explain why we are wrong to conclude that he has absolutely no idea what he's doing. But we'll return to that shortly. I should give you some breaking news, actually. And this is why it's so hard, really, to portray him as anything other than a deranged liar. NATO nations have done it's all in capital letters. It's dropped while we've been on air. Sometimes I think he waits. NATO nations have done absolutely nothing to help with the lunatic nation, now militarily decimated, of Iran. The USA needs nothing from NATO, but never forget this very important point in time. President, oddly, not in capitals, except the P, Donald J. Trump, back in capitals again. And there it is. I mean, make of that what you will. And we'll return to the business of trying to make sense of it. If not later today, then tomorrow. Mystery hour later today, of course, so that will curtail our opportunities somewhat. John's in Wearside in Hertfordshire. John, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, James, I find it all quite fascinating. I'm basically an addict in recovery. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I'm like 2.5 years in clean now. And cheers, man. It's been the best thing that's happened in my life. But you know, my understanding of the nature of addiction is that I'm uncomfortable experiencing my own feelings, basically.
Right.
And I will do anything to distract myself from feeling my own feelings. I mean, there's loads of phrases that go around in recovery, like the hole in the soul and stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've definitely been addicted to social media as
really?
Well. You know? Yeah, hugely. I mean, I was around COVID time, I was definitely using it as an escape from to change the feel. So my feeling in COVID was I was terrified, right?
Yeah.
I was terrified, but I didn't want to be terrified. So I would use social media to get angry about people's responses. Do you know what I mean? So I would change the feeling because one feeling was overwhelming. So I'd substitute it with another feeling, which I found more manageable. It's easier to control anger than it is fear. Do you know what I mean?
Angst and fear. Yes, of course we do.
You know, but it's just like a snake that's eaten itself a bit with social media. Because I think the way that it's designed, the algorithm or whatever, it gives you a sense of ease and comfort, do you know what I mean? Like, away from the troubles of your world, and it poses an imaginary world, and you compare it to your world, which you're uncomfortable in sitting in, do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, and you speak the language of addiction fluently for obvious reasons. I wondered whether somebody like you may actually object to the use of that word to describe social media overuse, because the effects are not so obviously harrowing, are they, either personally or socially. So it's fascinating that you have absolutely no hesitation to describe an addiction to social media alongside addictions to drugs and alcohol. You present one problem.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know that, A, everybody who has developed an addiction to social media is necessarily seeking to fill a hole in their soul. I mean, that's definitely the case with a lot of addictions. And I think perhaps that observation becomes even more pertinent when we turn our attention to 5 and 6 year olds, to young children at the centre of the court case that has prompted this conversation.
Sure.
That addiction has been very deliberately and cynically developed in the mind of a child who was previously perfectly healthy and happy, I think.
Yeah, but I think you could say the same for, like, you know, alcohol, gambling, buying clothes, whatever the addiction is that you have, relationships, you know, sex. You can say the same. People can start off not knowing that, like, having quite content and happy lives, but it's just when they realize that this is an easy fix for the times when they don't feel very comfortable.
Or even the dopamine, or whatever the correct chemical term is, even that becomes so addictive that you forget about all the other stuff and all you're interested is getting your next hit of that.
I mean, I think what's interesting is, like, you know, when do you know, do you cross the line? There's a thing in, like, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it talks about, like, you know, try and go over the road and do some controlled drinking and see how you get on if you're wondering whether or not you're an addict, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, if you are an alcoholic, there's no such thing as controlled drinking. And I think when it comes to social media, you could do that too. It's like, try some controlled social media. Can I only
And that takes us back to Helen. That takes us back to Helen realizing she couldn't.
Yeah,
it's a physical impulse to reach for your phone.
Yeah, and if you're struggling to not do it, then you've probably got an issue with it and maybe you need to look at it. You know?
I love the way you describe a snake eating itself, because in a sense you create the hole in your soul.
Yeah.
That you think social media will temporarily fill.
Yeah, and I think they're monetizing that, which is horrific.
That's a breakthrough,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a breakthrough for me in understanding, and that, because you're the traditional narrative of addiction that you describe quite perfectly, almost always, if not always, will involve trying to get away from your own reality, to get away from, as you described it, John, from your feelings. But what these people do with this software is that they create FOMO. They create that fear of missing out that becomes big, depending on who and what and how you are. That grows inside you so that you then reach a point where you have to check, you have to tune in, you have to log on, you have to start scrolling because of this itch that you've got inside you that needs to be scratched. But they've created the itch and the scratch, these companies. They've created the itch and the scratch.
Quite terrifying.
It is terrifying.
It's kind of worse in some ways than, because it's also accessible. It's in your hands. It's on your phone. It's like kids have got it. You see kids walking around. Just the other day, just like, you know, just noticing, like, walking down the street on your phone, everybody's on their phone all the time.
Yeah, no, I know. And a lot of the time they won't be. I mean, you know, they might be sending their wife a message asking what she wants for tea. Or they might be sending a lovely song to their children on Spotify. That's just me. That's literally the last two things I've done. But equally, they might be scrolling through. And that's the thing that we haven't... I mean, it doesn't... You've talked about anger replacing the feelings that you were making you uncomfortable. It doesn't even have to be that. It could just be an, oh, that's so cute. And then you've spent 8 hours doing it. I don't know why I'm haunted by the colleague who was looking at footage of a Labrador teaching a puppy to swim. And the next thing you know, I talked to another colleague this morning, I just have a quick look at Instagram, and the next thing you know, it's 2.5 hours later. And that is something that you owned that you've given away to someone who will make money out of it. That 2.5 hours of your time. You owned that, and you gave it away. Well done, Keith. That sounded quite ominous. I like it when that happens. It's almost like we plan this stuff. It's coming up to 11 o'clock. I'm torn, as I'm always torn. 52% thinks we should carry on with this because we are shining lights into places that we hadn't actually previously explored. John being a wonderful example of that. And the other 48% of me is wondering whether we return our attention to matters Middle Eastern. Donald Trump's posted another message on social media, this time not using endless capital letters. Trying to make sense of him is a mug's game, as we've established on a million different occasions. But the king is still due to visit. I suggested to you a couple of weeks ago that imminent state visit would become more problematic with every passing day. And I don't think you needed to be Nostradamus to make that prediction.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure after struggling to say how many UK warships there are. Speaking to LBC, John Healy was asked for the number of Royal Navy ships available for immediate deployment.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than a half.
Defence sources say he meant the UK had 17 destroyers, frigates and aircraft carriers when Labour entered government. Former political editor at The Sun, Trevor Kavanagh, has told LBC John Healy was left defenceless.
I feel sorry for John Healy, who is one of the decent, sane members of this mad government. But you left him, the Defence Secretary, completely defenceless. He had nothing to fight back with. There's hardly any army, hardly any navy, and we've got a tiny air force.
The government says it's set aside £300 million for building ships this year. Donald Trump has taken another swipe at his allies, saying NATO nations have done absolutely nothing to help with Iran. The US president says he's ready to unleash hell if Iran doesn't accept defeat in the conflict in the Middle East. The prime minister says there's no link between his former chief of staff's phone being stolen and the release of files about Lord Mandelson. Morgan McSweeney resigned last month after many blamed him for pushing the peer's appointment, despite his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Opposition parties have raised concerns the theft means related messages could be lost. Sir Keir Starmer has denied there's a conspiracy, though.
It was stolen, it was reported at the time, and the police have acknowledged and confirmed that that is what happened. And the idea that somehow everybody could have seen that sometime in the future there'd be a request for the phone is, to my mind, a little bit far-fetched.
And the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have welcomed a reckoning for social media giants after a major court case in the US. Meta and Google were found liable for a woman's social media addiction that she claims exacerbated her mental health problems. The companies say they will appeal the verdict. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 90 points at 10,017. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixed day across the UK with patchy cloud and rain in the northwest. Staying dry elsewhere with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
This Easter, enjoy Tesco finest Prosecco Rosé. 25% off when you buy 6 or more bottles of wine or fizz with your Tesco Club card. Just the savings you need this Easter. Because every little helps. Drinkaware 18 plus. Majority of larger stores and 6th of April. Club card or app required. Exclusions apply.
This-
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So I want to dig deeper into that now. So, I mean, I can't work on the presumption that you are listening to every minute of the programme. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not even sure I listen to every minute of the programme. We're all in danger of getting distracted. Not mentioning any names, but some people who work on the programme spend the entire 3 hours getting distracted by the... I thought you weren't listening at that point. But I want to dig deeper into it because I'm thinking about two things. I'm thinking at the moment in the last hour or in your life when you realised you had a problem. And I'm thinking about the moment that I turned down my social media use. Twitter was the thing I used to be borderline unhealthily on. In fact, I don't know if I can say borderline. If the people around you have got a problem with it, if your kids are saying, oh, Dad, come on, get off Twitter, will you? Then you're probably doing something that is bad, right? It is something that you would not be doing if you were in complete control of your life. So I caught myself at bedtime reading to one of my daughters and taking my phone out of my pocket. So I got the book in my left hand, my daughter on my chest. I'm reading the book with my left hand right hand behind her head. I'm just looking at my phone and checking. And I just remember thinking, what the hell are you doing, man? What are you doing? Now, happily, not only did I find it relatively straightforward to never take my phone into that context again, but a couple of years later, when Elon Musk bought Twitter and turned it into a fascist cesspit, I found it relatively easy to step away from Twitter entirely, to stop using it. Absolutely stone cold. Cold turkey, it would be. And I think if you'd asked me a month previously or 6 months previously whether or not I'd find that easy to do, I probably would have said, I don't think so. No, I think I'll probably find it really hard. And I'd have done that thing that addicts do. So the point of this intervention, by the way, is that I don't think I was ever an addict because I would have tried to justify it. I just, oh, no, I need it for work. I've got 1.3 million followers. It's a very crucial tool for promoting the James O'Brien programme. And I Reuters found me one of the most influential journalists in the country on social media. And that's all true. That's all significant. But it was better for me. It was better for me and my family for me to come off Twitter. There you go. And I did it, which means I probably wasn't addicted. But I reached a point where I was about to find out. Ah, that's interesting. So I reached a point where I knew it was bad for me. And you can do the bargaining. Is that what you call it? It's like the five stages of grief, isn't it? But I think addiction has similar processes. You do the bargaining. I haven't got a problem. I'm absolutely fine. I could stop whenever I wanted. You do the bargaining with yourself. And with me, that would have involved the things that I just said to you about the job and the nature of the nature of self-promotion or whatever it may be. And I don't know whether that's true or not. The numbers of listening to the radio show have continued to go up since I stopped being on Twitter, so I don't know that it was ever true. Maybe the clips, I don't know. I don't see the stats, really, but maybe the clips don't do quite as well as they used to do when I was promoting them myself on Twitter, because I think at the time I had more followers than LBC did. But all of these things would be bargaining. And sometimes, for professional reasons, you have to do things that aren't necessarily good for you, you know, in all sorts of lines of work. You might hate moments in your job, but you know you have to get through them to get to the other side. But I don't think that social media gets filed under that, because if you know it's bad for you and you can't stop doing it, then you've got a problem. So this is going to be a bit different now, because in the first hour, we were looking for people who knew what they were talking about. Now, I'm looking at you. And I want you to just think now. So what you have done in the course of the last 7 minutes, or if you've been listening all morning, in the course of the last hour and a bit, you've begun to wonder whether or not you have actually got a problem, or you have had your fears exacerbated or even confirmed. So you are listening to these descriptions offered up by people who really know what they're talking about. Not me, the callers. And you are actually, I am that person. That's me, that is. That's me, that is. That's me. Helen's talking about me. Helen might think she's talking about herself, but she's talking about me. Sasana might think she's talking about her clients, but she's talking about me. Talking about John, that's me, that's me, that's me. And I want you to tell me what made you realise that. It's not a physical addiction, is it? It's something else, it's something other than that. But what are you doing? So here's the key question. If you weren't doing the social media, your life would be better. And when you've spent 2 or 3 hours doing it, and you get to the end of that, you wish you hadn't. I think that's, you know what I'm like with Rosetta Stones and Skeleton Keys? I'm completely obsessed with the idea of finding solutions to problems. But that one there, right there, the thing that you know you wish you hadn't done, but you can't help doing it. What do you point at now? What do you think of? What have you thought of in the course of these conversations this morning? As examples of, oh, Lordy Lord, I think I might be an addict. The things in your life that are suffering as a consequence of the amount of time that you're spending on social media. That's what I want to talk about next. If you hit the numbers now, you will get through. Clearing, so the phone line's completely clear now. 0345 60 60973. This is what I want to go in on next. Because the tech companies are disputing the verdicts, they're arguing, they're planning to appeal, they're claiming that YouTube has been misunderstood. But we know that there is truth in the idea that you're doing this, you're on social media, and you're using it, and you know that you should be doing something else. You know that it is either distracting you from healthy... I want to think about me in bed. Actually, let me rephrase that. Just think about that moment I had in my life when I knew that there's something really, really, really wrong about me checking my phone when I should be and when I am in the middle of reading a bedtime story to my daughter. And those moments, those realizations that this is not just a sort of harmless or a helpful or a useful bit of kit that you've got in your hand that lets you play games and send messages to your mum and keep an eye on the football scores, but something about the way they have designed these platforms, the way they have engineered this technology, is stealing your time from you. It's stealing from you and selling what it's stolen. That's a helpful way of thinking of it. It's stealing. Because you don't want to give it to them, but they're taking it anyway. And that's when you're addicted. So just talk me through the moments of realization. Either, you know, I mean, in a way, the ones that you've had today, contemplating this story, listening to this radio program. But of course, if you're already familiar with this process, what were the moments? What was the moment? The point where you go, oh my days, this is just bonkers. I should not be doing this. I have got a problem. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. I've resisted the urge. I wonder whether I'm addicted to talking about Donald Trump. I've resisted the urge to wade straight back in to matters Middle Eastern. But the second message that he has posted this morning, I should share with you. The Iranian negotiators are very different and strange. And for reasons only he knows, he's put the word strange in quotes. They are, quotes, begging, end quotes, us to make a deal, which they should be doing since they have been militarily obliterated with zero chance of a comeback, and yet they publicly state that they are only looking at our proposal. Also in quotes, wrong, capital letters, 3 exclamation marks. They better get serious soon before it is too late, because once that happens, there is, capital letters, no turning back, and it won't be pretty. President DJT. I don't know whether I've run out of rope or run out of steam on that. We'll return to this territory tomorrow, but I'm just enjoying this conversation about, I don't know, real life, as it were, real direct, immediate experience and life, and the dangers that something that is as baked into our existence as clothes and food. Social media is like nothing else that has grown up in the course of my lifetime in terms of the impact it's had and the changes it's made to the way that we live our lives. And it's increasingly clear that it's poisoning us. And of course, if you're addicted to it, then the poison will do infinitely more harm than it will if you are in control of your habit, if you are in control of your usage. So talk to me about the realization that you're not. And if it's come this morning, then in many ways, you'll go to the front of the queue. But don't feel that it has to have happened this morning. You're just listening to the conversation and you're thinking, I am not in control of my... If this was alcohol, and I was realising now that I'm not in control, I'd be terrified. That would be huge. If this was sex, and I was realising now that I'm doing things that are damaging my life and I'm not in control of them, you would break the glass, right, and set the alarm off. If it was food, if you were making yourself ill because you couldn't look away from food, if you anything else that we fight, if it was gambling, you're in danger of losing the house or the car, or you've got no money left 3 weeks before payday, all of these things, you would realise you are doing yourself harm. But what social media steals from you is time. And I want to know about the moments of realisation, okay? That is the crucial question. Let me read you some messages. Jonathan's in Deal. I think this might help me. I spend so much time, which I can't afford, just scrolling all kinds of rubbish. I keep telling myself to stop, but it seems impossible. It does me no good, James. There's no feeling of satisfaction, and my precious time has been wasted. Today, he says, I will stop. On a lighter note, Alan recognises one of the things I shared with you earlier when he says, crazy taxi stole my life for nearly a year. I love that game, but you're right. There would be 4 o'clock in the morning moments where you thought, what the heck is wrong with me? Why am I still playing this? Why am I still doing it? But that feels childlike compared to what we are describing now. And then Emma cites the 12-step addiction framework, whereby step one is admitting that it's making your life unmanageable, if you like. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And step two is the belief that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I don't know what that power is in the context of social media, but the original acknowledgement that your life has become unmanageable, you are not in control anymore, and you should be. What made you realise that? What caused that particular penny to drop? It's 11:15.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London, with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore II. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
My name is Karen, and this is my NHS story. You don't realise how blind you are until you have cataract surgery. I was referred to a surgical hub, and they booked us in for an operation. It was about 3 weeks before I was there. It's very, very quick.
The government is opening more surgical hubs, with more than 120 already operating across England, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS fit for the future.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 16 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The moment of realisation, the dropping of the penny, I am addicted, and I didn't think I was. And if it's in the context of social media, then it is of particular interest today. And imagine also that you're explaining it to somebody who doesn't get it, who doesn't fully understand, because they've never really had this experience. Lucy's in Finchley. Lucy, what would you like to say?
Hello, hi.
Hi, Lucy.
I recognised last week that I have got an enormous addiction to YouTube.
Go on.
And it's an absolute nightmare. And I was saying to your producer that I kind of took the moral high ground before, oh, I don't scroll on Instagram,
yeah,
thinking that on YouTube I'm watching something useful, I'm learning something. And then the thing is, it's with the algorithm, it gives me things that I like watching, and so I can't stop watching. So I'm like, I've noticed even when I'm watching, I'm looking at the side of the screen to see the next thing I want to watch.
Do you know, there's a wonderful line in a Martin Amis novel about looking forward to his next cigarette while he's still smoking right. the last one. I just thought that was such a beautiful description of addiction.
Yeah.
And that's you, mate.
That's where I'm at. That's exactly where I'm at. But you know, I'm very, very aware of it. I'm very self-aware anyway. But the thing is, it's like I've got to do something about it. So whenever I work, I always put my phone on silent anyway and put it to the side.
Right.
But it's just that there's a pull inside that's saying, get on it again. And once I'm on it, it's the getting off that's the problem. So, like, this morning, I was on YouTube from... I used to meditate in the mornings.
Right.
I still try to. But now, like this morning, I was on YouTube from 5.30 till 8.30.
Whoa.
Just watching video after video. They're all interesting videos.
What were the videos?
I was watching things about slow living. I was watching things about decluttering. I was watching things about spirituality. I was watching something about music because I'm a musician.
No, but that's so interesting because you're watching things that are supposedly healthy. They're like the opposite modernity
exactly.
and technological addiction. But you're actually, via technology, you're addicted to the stuff that is...
Yes.
Appealing to your rejection of the stuff that you're addicted to. This is insane.
Yeah, it really is. And I know it's insane because it's like I'm kind of watching from the outside in and I'm looking at myself going, what are you doing? What's going on? And so the funny thing was a few weeks ago, I decided to delete YouTube off my phone and on my tablet. And I was like, great, deleted it. But then what I started doing was when I really got an urge, I then... installed it again, reinstalled it.
How quickly? How long did you stay off?
Probably a few days.
Right.
And then what happened was then I put the timers on. Right, so I have an hour a day or half an hour or whatever. So then the timer goes off and then it suddenly says, add 10 minutes at the end and then press that. And then I go in and go right into the settings and then change it again up to 2 hours or 3 hours.
This is fascinating.
You know, because I'm really watching myself.
So what made the penny drop? So why only last week? Because it sounds like you've been in this spiral for a long time.
Yeah, I've been in it for a long time and I've noticed it. But I think it was the realisation that it's not okay to just watch things that you think are good for you or that are okay. Because I thought I was okay because I was watching things that are good for me. Whereas, say, my partner might be watching, you know, silly things on Instagram.
This is healthy and nourishing. This is so. I suppose we're looking at the possibility that you can actually be addicted to salad.
Yes,
you're addicted to the healthy food.
Yes,
but you're not in control of your consumption of it. So therefore, you've got a problem. Even though it's lettuce, it's not making you. Can I ask you a personal question? So when you talk to me, if you can, and if you don't mind, about what you were like at 11:20. In the days when you were meditating every morning, and what you are like now?
Oh, well, it was great, because my mornings just used to be very, very quiet. It depends if I was working or not, but if I wasn't working, very, very quiet. And I'd have it like a more than inner peace. And now I have this kind of agitation in my brain all the time. It's just an agitation. And I have also, my eyesight hurts. My eyes have got worse. I've never had bad eyesight. I now have to wear glasses because I'm staring at a screen so much. I know it is. Because we were told as children, I mean, I'm in my 50s, we were told as children, don't stare at the television too long. So we didn't. But now it's like you're staring at a tiny screen. So your eyes are zoomed into this tiny little screen. And my eyes hurt all the time.
Would you be offended if I said that I can hear the agitation?
No, I wouldn't be at all, because I'm aware of it.
You do not sound like someone who was meditating at 7 o'clock this morning.
I didn't meditate today.
I know you didn't. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what you would have sounded like yesterday, but there is a sort of freneticism in what you're telling us. It's as if we can't wait to get it all in there and get it. What are you going to do about it, Lucy?
I'm definitely going to delete YouTube again, but I mean, I have considered coming off the phone and actually getting rid of my smartphone. The problem is, I think where they've got us is that everything that we use on our smartphone, we kind of feel we need, like, we, you know, Google Maps, you know, like you said, Spotify or whatever you listen to. All those different things are things that we kind of use. So they've made it so we need our
smartphones.
Oh, here we go. Smartphones.
I see. That's what I meant by agitation.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore putting it away means, and also if you've still got it in your hand, then it's a lot harder to, I mean, one of my friends has just moved Instagram to page 4 of their app so that you have to swipe left 3 or 4 times before you get to Instagram.
Oh, and my YouTube is way past 4.
So you've already done that. You've tried that.
I just go into search now. Just put search in and it comes up.
This is absolutely fascinating because, I mean, this is, you know that you're in this mess, and yet you also know that it's not going to be very easy to get out of it. And you're almost already bargaining and thinking, well, if I do that, that will happen anyway, so there's probably no point doing that in the first place.
Yeah, but I know that I'm going to do something about it because I just will, because I know that it's zapping life from me, and I've got too many things that I do. I've always been a very productive person. I think what happened was that I was diagnosed with a health issue, so I had a little bit more time on my hands because I couldn't work as much.
Right.
And so usually when I was working a lot and I was very, very productive, but now I have a bit more time on my hands because I'm trying to do a bit of slow living.
Yeah.
And so then I go into YouTube and I think, oh, I'll just have a little look at this, just 10 minutes. You know, hour, 2 hours goes past.
And the next thing you know, it's gone, 2, 3
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, I mean, I won't do it sort of during the day, really, but it's more morning and night. But those are the times, actually, when you should either be just getting into your day really slowly or kind of just relaxing into your sleep. They're not the times your brain should be working at that pace.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, I guess that's the first stage, isn't it? Is acknowledgement and realization. But my goodness me, you do not make it sound as though it's going to be easy to wean yourself off it. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not in a position to give you any advice, far from it. But some people listening might be. And just recognizing that moment. And I love that. You're my favorite caller of the day. No offense to anybody else, because of that point you made at the outset about the fact that what you're watching is healthy. This is what I was really trying and probably failing to convey when I started talking about Michael Douglas and sex addiction. It's you're watching healthy, wholesome stuff. So we always dedicate or direct these conversations towards the grim stuff. We always talk about the dangers of social media through the lens of pornography or sex abuse or violence or racism or you know, the manosphere, the weird men peddling hatred and misogyny. We always talk about the dangers, almost always talk about the dangers of these platforms through the lens of the worst things on them. But look at Lucy, listen to Lucy, addicted to the platform, despite looking at what includes arguably some of the best things on the platform, the stuff that is encouraging you to lead a fuller, slower life, but the platform is engineered in such a way that you've got addicted to that. Because they don't care about what you're looking at. They care only about how long you're looking at it for. That call will stay. Lucy, you're a star. Thank you. That will stay with me. And hopefully with a lot of other people listening as well, because it just drives absolutely to the heart of what these court cases are about. Because the other thing I've got wrong this morning is not hitting you hard enough with the age of the people involved in these cases. These are not children who are masking or escaping from trauma or who are trying to fill holes in their soul. They're just logging on to look at stuff that they like fluffy bunnies or cartoon characters or children's issues. But the algorithm, the technology, the software is engineered in such a way that they will not be let go. They will be grabbed by the ears and welded to that screen by the technology that they're subscribing to. And that is the point, isn't it? That is why these lawsuits are being brought, because young people, or at least the adults in young people's lives, are recognizing that their existences are being ruined by the technology. So you give me your story like Lucy's, the realization, these moments, these penny drop seconds where you go, oh my Lord, I thought I was fine because I'm looking at wholesome stuff, because I'm looking at healthy stuff. Oh, I thought I was fine because I can take it or leave it. But you're realizing that you can't. And remember, as I said at 10 o'clock this morning, you can be describing watching it happen to somebody else as well. But that line between I haven't got a problem and I have got a problem is what fascinates me most today. Jake is in Bexhill. Jake, what would you like to say?
Hi there. I'm 34, and many years ago, after the lockdowns around 2022, I realised I was spending increasing amounts of time on Facebook and YouTube, where it would just scroll and scroll. And I looked into the psychology of it, because it's what gets you your dopamine hit. And you have that sort of allure to watch the videos, because they're designed as well to create emotion or reaction. Like your cute puppies or your hobbies that you enjoy doing.
What sort of stuff were you looking at? Or was it too broad to narrow down?
Like professional skateboarders. Yeah. Or
This is the thing that interests me most. Stuff that if you said to someone, "Oh, I'm watching a lot of skateboard videos," no one is going to go, "Oh, you're a pervert, or you're weird, or you're doing something dangerous, or I can't believe you're buying into all that nonsense." And that's what I mean by the lens. So often that we're looking through when we talk about social media use is a corrupting lens. But you're talking about, like Lucy, relatively innocuous, harmless, wholesome stuff, but it's addictive.
Yeah. It truly is. And where you're not, if you don't use Facebook for a little while, I tried to leave it for several weeks, and I find myself feeling more lonely, because you feel like you're more connected, even though you have many distant acquaintances on Facebook and social media, but you may never actually talk to or contact them. So it's sort of like you feel you're outside of the box if you don't use it for a bit.
Well,
and it's a psychological thing.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, you've got to better go and check in. I think this is what happened to a lot of people during lockdown in the sort of anti-vax world and things like that, is that they replaced their real life connections with the dopamine hits of both conspiracy theory and community. What made you realize, what set the alarm bells off in your own mind?
I was really putting my hobbies to one side, and I had to sort of try and think of social media or YouTube videos that drained my time as a bad thing, almost like a thought crime, if you will. Almost like unfreedom, so to speak.
Yeah.
In that I wasn't doing any of my own hobbies. I was watching other people do that, who were like professionals. But they're getting paid to create the video. They're getting paid to do it. That they have incentive. And it's just a very addicting draw.
And
I uninstalled all the apps.
Right, you just did it. You went cold turkey.
Yeah, and I deactivated Facebook, which is a good feature it has, without deleting the entire thing.
Okay.
And they also have these snooze timers built into YouTube now. I think that's to some degree good, but also it makes you think that you're doing well, if you can.
Well, it sounded like Lucy started manipulating those, didn't she, to kind of keep her fix coming. And did it work? How quickly did it work? How quickly did you feel freer?
It did definitely work. And then a year later, I decided to go cold turkey with alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
And managed for a few years. And I could smell, I don't know if you ever read Alan Carr's book, which is a very good book, about addiction. You're like the fly, and you can smell the honey in the fly trap. And it's drawing. It's got that allure the whole time. And, as one of the previous callers said, spend 5 to 10 minutes on TikTok or something, it learns who you are. It's like been programmed very well to drain.
So the smell of honey gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, and what I used to realise back when I was spending hours looking at social media videos is I'd then feel kind of lethargic afterwards. I wouldn't have that focus, that clarity that I wanted on piano or a task that I actually enjoyed doing.
Yeah, well, that's junk food versus wholesome food. But I suppose you could get addicted to watching piano videos, but if you were just playing the piano all the time, it would not feel as dangerous or as unhealthy.
No.
There's a hierarchy. I find this so interesting. Thank you, Jake. That's also brilliant and very, very helpful. That idea of the only stuff you need to worry about is the stuff that's bad for you is different from other addictions. The stuff that's good for you can be addictive, and the addiction is the danger. 03456060973 if you want to join the conversation. I've got an unhinged headline for you. It's an absolute classic, and it's bang on the money in terms of current affairs. And we've had a little bit of fun. I don't know if you were listening yesterday. Can we have the Donald Trump clip from yesterday? All right. Okay, sorry. I'm very late for the news. Lottie Morley has the headlines.
The Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure after struggling to tell LBC how many warships the UK has. John Healey gave the wrong answer when asked for the number of Royal Navy ships available for immediate deployment. Shadow Housing Secretary Sir James Cleverly has called it a humiliating exchange. Donald Trump says NATO nations have done absolutely nothing to help with Iran. The US president says he's ready to unleash hell if Iran doesn't accept defeat in the conflict in the Middle East. And health officials say the meningitis outbreak in Kent appears to be subsiding. The UK Health Security Agency says no new cases have been reported over the past few days. LBC weather, cloudy in the north and west this afternoon, staying dry and bright in the south with a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that gives your savings a boost anytime, anywhere.
Even when I'm on a work call.
You bet. You could earn 4.5% AER variable, including a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months. Right now with Chase, you could be boosting your way to
a rainy day fund.
Exactly. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross. Interest paid monthly, eligibility and terms apply.
As a business owner in the South East, you're full of potential, and so is your business. But to grow, to get somewhere new, you've got to try something new. So look around you. There's no better time than now to invest in a bright young T-level student. They'll inject fresh ideas and perspectives into your business, no matter its size. So go on, try something new.
It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 25 minutes to 12. As promised, I think we should have one of these.
Unhinged headline.
And it is inevitably from the Daily Telegraph, someone called Matthew Lynn, who has written under the headline, "The oil crisis is exactly what the Net Zero Brigade wants." Should we just have a little think about that? What, I mean, let's begin with the why. Let's pretend it was true and that everybody who recognises the urgency of tackling climate change is really looking forward to their fuel prices going through the roof, possibly even running out, a crisis comparable to the 1970s, and massive instability in the Gulf states. So let's just pretend that this clown is correct and that everybody who understands climate change science is really, really hoping for bad stuff to happen. Why would that hold? I love this because the bloke's too thick to realise that what he's saying is, oh, an oil crisis is really going to highlight the idiocy of over-dependence on fossil fuels when we have the alternative of moving more rapidly towards sustainables. So if ever there was an argument in favour of net zero, it's now. If Ukraine wasn't enough to make you realise that, then Iran will be. Because if you really don't understand why net zero is a brilliant blooming idea, then have a look at what happens when our absolute addiction to and dependency on fossil fuels leads us into precisely the sort of mess that we are currently being led into by our overdependence on and addiction to fossil fuels. So these people are so, their brains are so boiled that they are literally looking at conclusive proof that we need to move quickly away from fossil fuel dependency, and they are instead seeing it through the lens of tribal footballified politics, and they go, well, I bet the people who understand that sustainability is humanity's best chance of survival are really happy about this proof that sustainability is humanity's best chance of survival. And they end up writing an article that fits under the headline, "The Oil Crisis is Exactly What the Net Zero Brigade Wants." It is just breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking. But hey-ho, I'm sure the Daily Telegraph paid him for yet another
Unhinged headline.
11:37 is the time. Back to the question of addiction and the kind of breakthrough, really, with both of the last two callers, that you can be addicted to stuff that isn't bad for you if you're on social media, because it's the theft of your time that's intrinsic to understanding all of this. Mohammed's in Oxford. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi there, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind? I'm quite pleased, actually. I've never been addicted to social media. I flirted with it. I think I was in the foothills of it. But listening to people who have been, I'm confident that I am not now and never was.
So I had a screen addiction. And what I mean by that is I was, wherever I was, my social interaction, at home, I was just addicted to screens, from social media to gaming to YouTube to Netflix. I just wanted to see the videos at all times. And it was at a point where I wasn't aware that I am getting into these kind of screens. And it was a peer pressure as well. Not peer pressure, it was just my acquaintances and my friends. It was common. And it was back when I was in university as well that everyone is just using it. I felt normal. And it was just something where...
It's normal up to a point, isn't it? And that's one of the things that we're mapping today, is when normal becomes abnormal.
It's just, I think personally or psychologically, it's what you see, what you observe around you. If a person is, for an example, was smoking, or everyone is smoking around you, you would feel the urge of smoking as well to fit in the society. And that was a problem for me, where everyone was doing the same thing over and over again, and I felt like I have to do it as well.
But you were doing it way, way more than anybody else was.
Yes.
By the time you realised you had a problem. What made you realise you had a problem?
This is the turning point. So when I was in university, I failed my module.
Right.
And that just surprised me. And I'm like, I was gaming as well, almost, because the
screen addiction. You weren't doing any schoolwork.
Yes. And that just spun me for a second, and I was just, I was like, this isn't right. And being on the screen for so long time, they're all sitting at home just using phone or doom scrolling and things like that. Another problem rose, which was me ordering food. And that became a problem, and that became an addiction as well.
Do you know, there was a story, and this obviously didn't happen to you, but that idea of just shoving takeaway food into your mouth while staring at the screen and just getting into a sort of doom loop of unhealthy and bad behaviours. There's a story a few years ago that I didn't quite get at the time. It was in South Korea, and it was about a bloke being found in an internet cafe playing like a massive RPG wearing a nappy. I'm not even joking, because he couldn't even bear to be away from the screen for like, 2.5 minutes, I suppose, or maximum. So that idea of addiction is, it's very multifaceted. So you kind of clocked one evening, this can't go on. What did you do? Took the nappy off.
This wasn't the point where I clocked, when I was so much into problems, as I was saying to the producer, that there was a stack of problems tacking every day to a point where it exploded together. And that's when I realized, and that was the point where, middle of the night, I was sleeping, I woke up, and every single problem and issue just running into my head like a subtitle.
Yeah.
That I can read them, the problems, and I started crying. I was sobbing. I mean, I'm good now. Nothing to worry about. And I was sobbing, like, I was tearing down, and there was only one person at the moment. I just called my mum, and I couldn't say anything. I called her, and I was just crying. I'm like, there's no words. And she said one thing which changed my life at that point. She's like, there's the end. I mean, I'm translating.
Yeah, yeah.
But she said, there's light at the end of the tunnel, but just don't leave hope. Like, yeah. It just, even if it's like the size of a thread or a string, just hold on to it.
Never let go. You
will find something.
And from that on,
like, I have controlled my social media. I have controlled my gaming. I'm not saying that now I'm addicted.
Sure.
I still control things, but my social interaction is good. Like, from an introvert to I'm the most socially extroverted person now. And, like, people doesn't gather if I'm not there.
So they
would call me.
That's nice. So the problem was created in the usage. It's not as if, this is why, yeah, John's call was interesting. The traditional model of addiction is that you're filling a hole in your soul. It doesn't sound to me as if you were. It sounds to me as if you moved from healthy usage to unhealthy usage, and in that process you created a hole in your soul that you felt, yeah, you could only then fill through more usage. And what your mum reminded you of was that if you journeyed to that place, then you could journey back from it too. Back, yeah, to healthy usage, not back to cold, yeah, turkey, never go near any of it, but back to healthy usage, yeah, of it. You weren't traumatized, or you weren't dealing with a difficult memories or difficult past or running away from reality. Mm. You created the hole inside you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And most of my addictions were cold turkeyed. That's what I started doing. Even when I was overweight.
Yeah.
By the addiction of food and while playing games, I cold turkeyed, and I was like, you know what, I need to go back to when I was what I was, and I need to drop more.
Yeah,
I need to go to a better self, from eating healthy to socially interacting.
So you, when you woke up in tears in the middle of the night, you'd kind of fallen out of love with yourself. You'd kind of realized that you'd become somebody you didn't, yeah, want to be.
Yeah. And now my family see the change in me.
I bet they do.
And they ask me, and they're just like, well, how have you done? I'm like, I don't know. It just clicked. There was just
And that spark. Makes you quite lucky, I think, doesn't it? Because for some people, the journey back would have been much, much harder. And the moment of realization, yeah, may have still been somewhere on the horizon. Mohammed, thank you. Give my love to your mum, will you? If she has the first idea who I am, obviously don't bother if she doesn't. But it just
has... she doesn't. But I'll tell her that I was on the radio.
That'll do. Because that's a lovely story that you tell about her. And you know, all mums aspire to being, all parents aspire to being able to say the right thing at the right moment when your little boy or your little girl is struggling and suffering. And your mum got that absolutely right. And that's a thing of universal beauty.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Defence Secretary John Healey. Britain will be unable to meet its NATO commitment next month because it does not have any warships available. We're going to have to borrow them from Germany. How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Mr. Healey, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation has some in operation.
Where are all the others?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
My name is Chevy, and this is my NHS story. Over a couple of days, I was getting quite intense pain on the left side of my stomach. So I called my doctors and then was referred to the Eltham CDC. It was literally a seamless, stress-free day. There was no anxiety or worry.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Calling all young creatives.
It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in Year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We've taken a morning off from the situation in Iran. It doesn't mean it's not escalating or changing. It's just that the vexed business of trying to analyse what's going on, which is quite easy once you accept that Donald Trump is an entirely unreliable witness, even to his own actions. But what's going to happen next is anybody's guess. One thing you can say with relative confidence is that at some point, somebody in the sycophantry that surrounds him will invent another award to give him. And that happened yesterday. Here is the sycophant, the House Speaker, Mike Johnson. I'm not even making this up anymore. They've invented another award to give him. Here's the proof.
And so tonight, we have created a new award. We're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to honor him with a new award that we'll present annually from this point forward. But he is the suitable and fitting recipient of the first ever America First Award. We can think of no better title for what that is. That's this beautiful golden statue here, appropriate for the new golden era in America.
Hello? Coriolanus Snow? Anybody? Is that what was your favourite reference? What does it remind you of most? And speaking of what it reminds you of most, I played a clip of him yesterday. Well, I'll play you the clip and you tell me what it reminds you of, all right?
JD is involved and Marco is involved and Jared Kushner is involved, very smart guy. And Steve Witkoff, smart guy, is involved. And I'm involved.
Did it remind you of anything at all? Did it? Because it did me. Sometimes I don't listen. I tell them not to play me the clips until I'm live on the radio so that you know that my reaction will be entirely authentic. Play the Trump one again.
JD is involved and Marco is involved and Jared Kushner is involved, very smart guy. And Steve Witkoff, smart guy, is involved. And I'm involved.
Is that real? We haven't used... That's real, right? It's not AI saying, make it sound like he's saying the same thing. That's a genuine Scooby Dooby Dooby quote. It's Miss Chow next. Oh, dear. I think we've covered pretty much everything. I wanted to play you a clip of Jeremy King's Full Disclosure. We may have time for that because we didn't. It's Thursday already. We've got a new one coming out tomorrow, but I'd need one or two or three or possibly four more calls on this question. Scooby Dooby Doo! Amanda is in Western Supermare. Amanda, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello. I was just listening to that, and this sort of ties in with why I was calling you, because I have Trump derangement syndrome, okay?
Okay.
And I feed my addiction for that through Instagram. I was on Instagram on and off for 5 hours this morning.
Holy moly.
Now, I know, I'm glad you're shocked, because this is all getting logged to why I should focus on giving it up. I sent my nephew a reel. And he came straight back with me and said, why do you let this stuff get you?
Yeah.
What can you do about it? And I went on this huge sort of stood on my soapbox and said, come on, you've got to do politics. You can't be apathetic. Da, 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 da. This went on and on for over an hour. I went back to my feed and the first thing that came up was a reel of someone protesting apathy. And I thought, my God, they're good.
They've got me.
they're so good. I went straight to my comments. Actually, I didn't think that straight away. I went straight to my comments and I started to say, oh my God, I'm having this discussion. Aren't they annoying? Da, da, da.
Yeah.
And then I realised. They
know me so well.
They've got me. They've well and truly got me. But the thing is then, I then went to nature to calm myself down on my phone because my blood pressure is high at the moment and I'm monitoring it from my doctor.
Oh, Lordy. Oh, you've got to get off it, Amanda.
I have got to get off it. But I'm in this situation now where I think one of your previous users said the YouTube lady, we're using it for everything. We're using it to protest. We're using it to relax. We're using it for everything that we need. And I've got books on my footstool in front of me that I've bought to read. And they're just sat there looking at me whilst I'm on my phone.
Because you're not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
And so this is the point. And also, you're not actually protesting.
No.
And I don't mean this as a criticism. But you could, you're not on a march. You're not, you know, marshalling your forces.
Came up. This is what my nephew said to me. And I said,
it sounds like a bright lad.
I said, yes, but every single post I share, somebody else joins the fight. You know, I mean, what did I sound like? And the thing is, James, I try not to post.
Bless you. What did I sound like? Somebody else joins the fight. Exactly. Somebody else like me.
And the thing is, I share about 10 to 15 stories every single day. Nobody looks at them. I've got one person that follows my stories every day. And I say to myself, if I don't share this, I'm letting Lucy down.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
What do you think you're addicted to exactly?
Well, I think, you know, the Trump thing. The Trump thing is so bad. It is a car crash. You can't look away. So I do allow myself to,
I've got that. I mean, I don't think that's an addiction, but I've got the excuse of it being my job. But in terms of why you can't, because you could spend 10 minutes on Instagram and do most of the things that you're describing to me. You don't, but it's the fact that you're there for 5 hours or for 3 hours. That's what moves you into the realms of addiction. And is it just the sense of fulfillment that you're getting from? Do you finish and feel good or do you finish and feel bad?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I feel like, yes, I'm a switched on, strong, independent woman, and I know how to fight against this demon. But I don't know. I wonder, you know how the smoker says, it's not the cigarette, it's just the action of moving it and taking the deep breath. And I know I definitely, because I put my phone down and I think I'm not going to look at that again. And I pick it up.
What's the longest you go? What's the longest you go without picking it up again?
About 8 hours when I'm asleep.
That doesn't count. That doesn't count, you cheat.
And it works.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
I think I just have to hope that this realisation kicks in and stays with me.
Yeah.
But my husband's got the same thing, okay? He's better because he listens to podcasts and he listens to you every day he comes
home. That's
fine,
that's healthy.
What about you been saying?
Yeah, no, that's healthy.
That's
healthy. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's a lie. He's going to be so proud of me today, James, as I'm talking to you.
That's lovely.
But I think we had a conversation recently because it's affecting our relationship.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like it's all we've got in common is a TDS, a Trump Derangement Syndrome.
Yeah.
But we did agree. It was all focused on him at that point. Like, well, you need to get off your phone more. He's doing it. He's actually playing along. And then I realised when he's not around, I'm doing it too. So I'm hoping that the realisation.
Well,
I'm
you've got the call now. You can
me.
You can rewind live radio, so you can keep this call. You can.
But
then you can both listen to it as a way of sort of reminding yourselves of what you have come to realise in the course of this conversation. So I mean, it's lovely when you use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, but of course, people who failed to understand what a terrible threat he posed to everything used to use it as an insult for people like you and your husband and me, people who did understand how hideous this moment in history was. And that's fine. Understanding how hideous the moment in history was not only is necessary, but it also makes you more intelligent and more observant than some of the people in my line of work who actually get paid for their opinions on a daily basis. But when you're spending 3 to 5 hours indulging whatever it is you're indulging on social media, then you're moving into the realms of the unhealthy. It's another fascinating distinction. Speaking of unhealthy, Henry Reilly is off again today. He's presenting overnights on LBC at the moment, which means we don't have a Reilly's Reform Roundup. But there was a moment from PMQs yesterday that unfolded after we'd left that I think fills fills the gap rather nicely.
I can tell the House we will act decisively to protect our democracy. That will include a moratorium on all political donations made through cryptocurrencies. I hope that will be welcomed across the House. There is only one party leader who has shown he will say anything, no matter how divisive, if he's paid to do so.
Nigel Farage!
It's just a nice timely... I presume they knew that was going to happen as well because of the order in which PMQs take place, but the Prime Minister there just giving a little nod to the disgusting things Nigel Farage will say for coins feature that has been unfolding for a week or so on this programme and will hopefully return sooner rather than later. A few of you, I presume in a tongue-in-cheek fashion, are suggesting that you can become addicted to this programme or indeed this radio station. I don't know whether or not you'd be able to describe where the line is between being unhealthy and healthy. I think you're probably just teasing me a bit, but it's an interesting question. We've spent quite a lot of time examining the possibility of an addiction being to something otherwise wholesome or healthy. Perhaps we should have included ourselves. You can probably get addicted to Mystery Hour. Shall we squeeze in Sarah in Tavistock? I haven't got long, Sarah. What would you like to say?
Hi. Hello. Hi. James, just very quickly, because I know you've got 2 minutes. I just want to say a huge thank you to Lucy and yourself for raising this issue about, obviously, the difference between content and how addiction develops. And I have saved it on my phone to play for my children when they come home from school, because we are having this discussion literally every single day this week where their friends are saying, why are you not YouTube? Why are you not on Instagram? Yeah. Why are your parents blocking you to do this? I know from personal experience, I was incredibly addicted to Facebook. And I thought that, you know, I had no problem until I realized I had a problem. And it all started very innocently. And my children are constantly asking, yes, Mum, but we are not looking at harmful content. Yeah. You know, we're looking for educational videos. And my 8-year-old was asking me that yesterday, and I couldn't find a word to explain.
Well, you could still, I mean, if you said to her, you can watch half an hour, and then that's it.
James, I know my kid, and I know she has got this addictive personality, and I know it's not going to be half an hour.
Yeah.
I'd much rather select videos for her and say, you know, or she can tell me what she's interested, do it together, and they can do it, but just leading her on a laptop to go to do a research project, but I know there is so much distraction.
Yeah, no, you're right, and you've got it now. Here it is, and this story's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. The jury in this case was asked several questions about the potential negligence and failure to warn about the dangers of those products, and that's where it has fallen to parents, often unqualified to make these judgments, because the peddlers, the harvesters of our children's attention, are doing the opposite of making these judgments. They're trying to suppress the reality of the situation in order to continue to pursue profit. Sarah, thank you. You self-edited, I think. You knew that you were going to be trying to fill a relatively short amount of time. And given that it's Thursday, I do like to spend 30 seconds or so setting up what happens next on a good Thursday, on a normal Thursday. Acts of God and acts of war notwithstanding, it's time for Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. 0345 6060973 is the number you need if you've got a question that needs solving, or indeed an answer to somebody else's question.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure after struggling to say how many warships the UK has available. John Healy was asked here on LBC earlier how many are in service.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government.
Defence analyst Francis Tusa, who was listening into the interview, questioned the numbers.
If you were to add up all of the ships we could generate over time, it might be 11. But at the moment, you have two Type 45 destroyers available and probably three Type 23 frigates.
Defence sources say he meant the UK had 17 destroyers, frigates and aircraft carriers when Labour entered government. Ministers are promising to spend £300 million on shipbuilding this year. Donald Trump says NATO nations have done absolutely nothing to help with Iran. The US president says he's ready to unleash hell if Iran doesn't accept defeat in the conflict in the Middle East. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex have welcomed a reckoning for social media giants after a major court case in the US. Meta and Google were found liable for a woman's social media addiction that she claims exacerbated her mental health problems. They say they'll appeal the verdict. Former UK managing director of YouTube, Bruce Daisley, says we could see more cases like this in the future.
Clearly, most of us, our relationship with social media is adjacent to addicted, if not fully addicted. So the implication, if that was rolled out to the 3 billion people worldwide who use these social platforms, is clearly pretty enormous.
The UK is said to be facing weaker economic growth and higher inflation because of the war in the Middle East. The OECD says the conflict could lead to global energy shortages and higher food prices as well. And the date of the King's speech has been confirmed by the leader of the House of Commons. The government will set out its agenda for the year on the 13th of May. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 130 points at 9,976. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixed day across the UK with patchy cloud and rain in the northwest, staying dry for most elsewhere with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
My name is Kathleen and this is my NHS story. Having a persistent cough is quite socially embarrassing. So I went to see a respiratory nurse who sent me off for an x-ray at my local CDC. And they were offering Sunday appointments and evening appointments, which was great.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. Do you think, I mean, my all-time favourite clip on LBC involves a caller to Nigel Farage suggesting that he'd changed his mind about Brexit because he'd got kicked in the head by a horse. But, and you know what my ego's like, so the idea of my all-time favourite clip on LBC involving somebody else's programme is a bitter pill to swallow. But I do wonder whether that great work by my colleague James in finding the most perfect clip of Scooby-Doo sounding uncannily like the President of the United States of America, or of course vice versa, I wonder whether that, in a few years' time, we've probably added now to the problem of social media addiction by releasing that into the atmosphere. That might be, I don't know though.
Oh, no.
Stop it, Keith, seriously, I've got a radio show to present. I'm a proper grown-up radio presenter. I corpsed Henry the other day, do you remember? You'll kind of come close to... But please don't, because it's not very professional. And also, it might make me sound bad. It's 5 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So, Mystery Hour is upon us. If you're not familiar with this feature, just let me fill you in briefly. Someone will ring in with a question in a minute. And then, a bit later, someone will ring in with the answer. There you go. That'll do. Talk among yourselves. Somewhere between those two positions, the magic happens. If you hear somebody asking a question to which you know the answer, then do feel free or possibly even compelled to call in. There's no rules. It might be a very serious stroke scientific question. It may be a rather silly one. The point is, of course, that all human life is here. The only rules that don't really apply anymore, or at least we usually forget them, we don't like motoring questions. We don't like anything to do with motoring on this program. It's a bit of a prejudice on my part, but, you know, compared to some of the prejudices you hear on the radio, it's a relatively healthy one. And we don't like repetition, although, goodness me, we struggle to remember what we did. Well, I can't tell you what I had for breakfast, let alone what's happened on this segment of the programme at some point in the last 10 or 15 or however many years it is that we've been doing it. So that's kind of it. My favourite contribution of the week, by a human, not by a cartoon dog, will win the Mystery Hour game, or a Mystery Hour game. There are now two versions of the Mystery Hour game. You can find out more at mysteryhour.co.uk. My favourite contribution of the week will win either the Mystery Hour board game or the Mystery Hour game travel edition. It's in a tin. Full terms and conditions for that are available at lbc.co.uk. If you want to buy a game, then you can go to mysteryhour.co.uk. And I think that is probably it. So the questions can cover any ground at all. And the highest honour available, we've given one out this week. First time ever, I think, we've done a retrospective. Ray Liotta, wasn't it, when we called Ash back in Northampton, because I realised after the programme that even though we were discussing something as serious as the Strait of Hormuz and the mining by the Iranian, as in laying mines, not as in extracting ore, the mining of the Strait of Hormuz by the Iranian authorities, that we had a regular listener who usually pops up on Mystery Hour to answer maritime questions. We had a regular caller who is among the best qualified people on the planet to talk about the business of navigating the Strait of Hormuz and, crucially, avoiding the mines that have been laid there by the Iranian military. So he got one a day after he made the call. You could get one today if your qualifications for delivering the answer that you deliver are mind-bogglingly appropriate. Mind-bogglingly. Is apposite the right word to use there? And do you pronounce it apposite or apposite? See, the mysteries have already begun. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Tom is in Austin. Tom, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Austin, Texas. Can you do the accent, please, just to make the show sound a little bit more international?
I mean, if you're going to force me, I can say, howdy, y'all. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, that sounded like you'd just come straight from Henley-on-Thames, mate.
Guildford, sorry.
I wasn't that. There you go. I wasn't far off. Craig, what's your question?
So my question is, I am a fair-skinned, freckled older man who likes cycling, particularly here in Texas where the weather is great. I can cycle for 2 hours and not get sunburned.
Oh.
However, if I stand outside my house for about 10 minutes, I get sunburned. Why do I not get sunburned while riding my bike for 2 hours, but I do get sunburned if I stand around outside my house for 10 minutes?
That's extraordinary. And you're fully clad while riding bike. You're not. I mean, you've got skin exposed, is what I mean. It's not. It's not. I mean, you. What do you wear? Is what I'm asking, but not in a weird way.
Not in a weird way, obviously. No, I do wear the Lycra. I am a fan of the shorts. And
you're
the,
a mammal. The shorts, you're a middle-aged man in Lycra.
I am. And very proud of that.
No, so what flesh is exposed? Your face, obviously, the top of your head, the neck area?
The neck, the face, and predominantly the arms and the legs.
Right,
the arms,
that's what I'm interested in.
If I stand outside my, if I'm mowing the grass.
Yes.
And I've got a t-shirt and shorts on, I can mow the grass for 10, 15 minutes and my arms start to go pink.
Yeah.
The same flesh exposed to the sun whilst on my bicycle doesn't
a brilliant
get
question.
The same problem.
Yeah, no, this is an absolutely brilliant question. Don't take my word for it. Richard's just texted to say the same. And he must mean you because you're the first one on. Sometimes I get a message that says this is a brilliant question and it could be someone listening on catch-up. It could be someone referring to the phone-in show, the phone-in topic that we had 2 minutes ago. But this is you. That's all for you. It's a brilliant question. And you're cycling, just for the avoidance of doubt, you're not cycling through a forest or a mountain pass in Texas.
There are no mountain passes in the particular part of Texas where I live. It is sadly rather suburban. It is hilly, but it is not particularly shady.
But you're not in shade, and there is no possibility that you're cycling faster than light.
No, my
maybe downhill
prevents me from doing that.
Okay.
I think I've reached 30 miles an hour before, but then
holy
I get a bit
moly
nervous.
Well, be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful. That's without stabilisers. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Why does Tom get sunburned when he's mowing the lawn for a 10-minute interlude in Texas, but not when he goes for a 2-hour bike ride? I love that question. The answer's probably quite obvious, but I'm dashed if I know what it is. Kevin is in Colchester. Kevin, question or answer?
Question, James.
Kevin.
I was watching Idris Elba hijack the other day, and I was wondering what speed would an airplane have to be traveling at for it to potentially risk falling out of the sky? Because I think they travel quite fast, don't they? Like over 300 miles per hour or something like that.
I don't really know, but I agree that they definitely travel quite fast.
Yeah, so what speed would they be at risk of falling out of the sky? Would it be 100 miles per hour or 50 miles per hour?
Well, because gliders fly, don't they?
Yeah.
How long have you been listening to this program, Kevon?
Since 2018.
Is it Kevon or Kevon?
Yeah. Kevon.
K-E-V-O-N. Now, yes, I saw Kevon. That. I just wanted to make sure I was pronouncing it right. So do you remember, before Keith arrived here, we had a character called Jones the Engineer, who used to be in charge of pressing the buttons on this. So Jones the Engineer is now a pilot.
Right.
He's now... I thought you'd be more excited, mate, to be honest. He's a pilot. He's trained as a pilot. He is now known as Jones the Pilot. He's even got a YouTube channel, Jones the Pilot, on YouTube. Go along, like it, subscribe, watch his brilliant piloting films. So he might know.
Yeah.
But the point is that some planes... I mean, gliders stay in the sky, even though they're not going very fast at all. So very it fast, might have something to do with aerodynamics. So there might not be an answer to your question.
Oh, no.
Something's like float in this. What about a parachute? Well, it's falling. So at what point does it start falling, even if it falls quite gently? It's not just going to plummet out of the sky. It might glide gently to the ground.
Yeah, interesting.
Are you enjoying Hijack with Idris Elba?
Yes. My wife and I just finished season one and we're on season two now.
My mate is in it.
So we're on
My mate Paul is in it.
And he plays one or two
in series one. He plays the kind of bald headed Irish fella called Gary.
Oh, right.
It's a good part. He's in all seven episodes. He's a brilliant actor. Paul is the show is coming back, isn't it? It's been second series already.
Yeah, second series has started.
Right, you're on. Yeah. I'll find out for you. Falling out of the sky, 30 minutes after 12. Simon's on, not in, the Wirral. Simon, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James. Nice speaking to you.
Likewise, Simon.
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Simon.
I've got two cats.
Okay.
One of them will hunt down bees and wasps and eat them.
Yes.
Now, the other one avoids them.
Oh.
How can she eat them and...
What, you mean on an ethical level, a moral level?
No. How can she not get any sting from them? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course I know. I mean, I know what the word sting means, Simon. I'm not a complete imbecile.
But she will sit there and pull them apart and then eat them.
Like the wings and take the...
And the body.
And the body and the sting. Well, I mean, a sting is... In a way, a sting is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? In that, you know, some creatures don't get stung by things that sting. It's not a guaranteed thing, a sting. Ding-a-ling. School bell a ring.
But ding-a-ling-a-ling. Other cat will avoid them.
Rice and peas. So your other cat has been stung. Probably.
Well, I don't know if he's been stung, but probably
he's learned his lesson.
Yeah. Well,
stung on the nut, I don't know. So how can one cat eat a wasp, but the other cat can't or won't?
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. I mean, the eye of the beholder. Well played. I put it on the... do you know, sometimes, Simon... I'm going to confide in you now. I can trust you. I can trust you, can't I, Simon? You won't tell anyone.
No.
Sometimes I keep someone on the line like this because I'm absolutely certain that the answer is going to present itself to me if I can just hang in there for a little bit longer.
Okay.
But I got nothing. I've got nothing. I just thought it would occur. So some things that sting don't sting, if you see what I mean. So, you know, if a wasp stings a whale, or I don't know, something...
Yeah, but you think a small cat and a bee sting, it could kill it.
You would imagine so, but what if they don't have the same reaction to stings that we have, is what I'm saying. So it's something to do with histamine, isn't it? Histamine.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm calling you.
Yeah, I know, all right? I'm just clarifying the question in the hope of enhancing the possibility of getting an answer, Simon.
Okay. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Simon. It's 12:15.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen. It's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
You know what I love about Eurostar? The comfortable seats with lots of legroom. You know what I don't love? Playing hide and seek with my feet. Or playing footsies with my neighbour.
Ouch!
Sorry. Now that I'm on the Eurostar, the only game I'm playing is stretchy, stretchy leg leg, and I always win. That's the ticket.
Eurostar. Together, we go further. Legroom varies by class of service.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Wide.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
Knife and fork, a fight for dumpling. My apologies, I just misquoted Shabba Ranks. This is a low point in the old career, isn't it? I mean, if there's one radio show in the world where you can reliably expect Shabba Ranks to be accurately quoted, it would be this one, wouldn't it? Knife and fork. Sorry, I don't know where I got rice and peas from. It's a dumpling. It's a tune, though, right? We can all agree about that. Little bit of it before the end of the, before the hour is like... Bev's been in touch. She says, are you all right, James? I always get messages like that during Mystery Hour. If you're not familiar with this feature and you listen to the other 14 hours of non-award-winning radio, then you could be forgiven for thinking that I'd had some sort of episode. But this is normal. This is normal, with or without contributions from Scooby-Dooby-Doo. Mike's in Taunton. Mike, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer, please.
Carry on, Mike.
So the question about what speed does an aircraft need to be going at before it falls out of the sky. So what we're talking about here is stall speed.
Yes.
And it's different for all different aircraft. We've spoken before. I've invited you riding, James.
Can I level with you, Mike?
Go on.
I'm too scared.
No. Yes.
I know. I would have gone. No, it's something weird. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 56. I started when I was 47.
Oh, all right. Well, you drive a coach and horses through my theory. But I would have done it. I'd have bitten your hand off 20 years ago. Also, yeah. We had the bloke on the other day, desperate to go up a crane. And then I started thinking about it afterwards, and I thought, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. So 20 years, I don't know whether it's mortality or whatever it is, but I just think something would go wrong now, and so I'm never going to go gliding with you, Mike. I hope that hasn't ruined your day.
It's not. I can live with that. So what we're talking about is the stall speed, basically.
Oh, sorry. Just doing a bit of biographical background, mate. A little bit of emotional connection, a little bit of blokish brotherly banter, but you crack on. You crack on. Don't mind me.
I'm sorry. Well, no, to be honest, I will go back. I'm a bit the same on fairground rides.
Yes.
If I go with the kids... yes. It's Alton Towers. I'm less keen to go on some of those things than I was. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
So back to the stall speed.
Yeah, back what to the stall speed.
Speed of the air over the wing.
Yes.
And it's different on different aircraft. In a glider I might be flying, for example, you could be below 40 knots airspeed.
Wow.
And the aircraft will fly quite nicely. On a huge thing like an A380, it might be close to 200 knots. So it's about weight. It's about it's about size of wing, the shape of the wing. When I say stall speed, we're talking about the wing stalling and no longer providing enough lift, not the engine, although incidentally I have stalled the wing and the engine simultaneously in an aircraft, which is exciting.
You call it a stall turn, right, when you just drop out of the sky?
That's exactly what I was doing. I did a stall turn.
So
full power straight up, and you wait. You're good.
Wait until the
aircraft's run out of path, and then you turn the rudder, dump the rudder over, and you turn back down towards the ground by stalling the engine and the wing.
That's
so
incredible.
We spoke a year or two ago about council finances and why the potholes were bad. I'm not going into motoring, don't worry.
Okay.
But you gave me a Rayleigh Otter on something other than the Thursday, so I'm very proud of that. And I've had it added to my professional qualifications after my name on my business card. So I've got RL on my business card.
I love that. Ashley Northampton's just contacting the printer as we speak to make sure he gets RL stuck after all his maritime and academic qualifications as well. Just remind us then what your qualifications are to answer this question.
Glider pilot and all-round aviation enthusiast.
Do they launch gliders out of big rubber bands, or do you get towed into the sky? What?
No, that is a thing. There's a number of ways of launching. Yeah. One of them is a big rubber band, a bungee.
Thank you. Keith just laughed at me.
I've not done it, but you kind of get fired into the air on a big rubber band.
Exactly.
The other way is you have a massive engine at the other end of the airfield which pulls in a cable and accelerates you quite violently to the air. You can be towed behind another aircraft, that's AeroTow, and then there's another one I haven't done, is AutoTow, where on a runway you can be pulled behind a car, and that can pull you in.
Gosh, that's exciting. So for the benefit of Kevon's question, if it's just a normal holiday-type jumbo jet, at what speed would it stall?
It depends on the aircraft, but I'm going to say that someone will do a steward's inquiry, but it's about 150 knots.
About 150 knots, which in miles per hour is about, what, about 120 miles an hour?
A bit more.
130.
A bit more.
140.
A bit more than that, so, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
We'll go with that.
We got there in the end. Have a round of applause. Well played.
Thank you.
22 minutes after 12 is the time. Nigel is in Bexhill. Nigel, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Nigel.
Well, it's a big question, James. I've always wondered this. What do angling shops do with the maggots they can't sell?
Well, they fly away.
Oh, imagine it. You open them.
Well, they do, though. Do you do a lot of fishing, do you?
Well, I did when I was a kid, and I remember my mother going rather mad at me when we opened the little tub up.
Because they turned into flies.
That's right.
I mean, it's a mischievous question that you ask, Nigel, isn't it? Because
Do you think so?
Well, they turn into flies, so you don't sell flies.
But you wouldn't want them to turn into flies.
There's not a lot you can do about it, mate. It's science, isn't it?
Well, you call it science. I call it a bit of a disaster.
How long does it take for the average maggot? We had a flipping corpse in the back garden. I should clarify that. It was a dead rat in the back garden the other night, and it was my job to... it's always my job to get rid of it, and I don't know why. I'm quite squeamish, and you know what's going to happen when you flip it over, don't you? Onto the garden spade, onto the shovel. And there's always, I'm not going to say it out loud because people are having their lunch. But do we know how long it takes for the average maggot to turn into a fly? Not like a super maggot, just an average one.
Personally, I don't, but I imagine it depends how warm they are, doesn't it?
It's going to have part of the process. So anyway, it's a silly question. We both know that, right?
Well.
I mean, it's all right for you. You're fine, but whoever put you through is going to get into a whole world of trouble when we come off air at 1 o'clock today.
Oh, I wanted to do this question for them.
But it's not an answerable question. A maggot becomes a fly. If it's a maggot, the angling shop will sell it. If it's a fly, it won't.
But surely they need to prevent it turning into a fly.
That should have been what you asked then. You should have said, is there any way for angling suppliers to prevent maggots turning into flies?
Well, let's do that then.
Well, it's too late now.
James, you're being hard on me today.
No, it's not. This is how mystery hour works, mate. I can't have one rule for Nigel and another rule for everybody else. There's quite enough of that in British politics already. 24, or at least in the media's attitude to British politics already. 24 minutes after 12. I'm just going to write down Nigel Maggots. Or Nigel Maggots, of course, as he prefers to be known. I'm just going to write down Nigel Maggots, and if anyone wants to ring in to answer that question, keep them in the fridge, and they will. The thing about maggots, he says, with absolutely no grounds for the confidence that he's about to display, the thing about maggots, they wriggle more when they're warm. Did you know that? So when I was, yes, true, when I was a kid, I did go fishing. Not a lot, but a bit. And it was, we thought, an old wives' tale among schoolboys that in order to keep your maggots wriggly, and I appreciate some people are having their lunch, but it's too late for me to do anything about that now. Do you know where you keep your maggots? By the riverside? When you want to keep them warm prior to putting them on your hook? Do you know? Keith? Eleanor? Anybody? Beulah? You keep them under your tongue. Ray's in Portadown in Northern Ireland. Ray, question or answer? True story.
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Ray.
I've often wondered if I'm exercising, going for a walk into town. I live about a mile just from town, and I would walk into town.
Yeah.
And there's many a time I'm tasting the diesel in the car from the cars going past.
You should move to London. We've got incredibly clean air now. The Mayor of London has defied all expectations, and we're now meeting almost all. Well, we are. We're world beating in terms of cleanliness of air. But I take your point. I remember what it was like when you could taste it in the air. It's horrible.
Yeah. And my question is the exercise better for me than the damage from the pollution?
Oh, I like the way your mind works. You're basically looking for any excuse to avoid exercise. And pollution would be quite a good one. So there's no point going out, is there, really? Because I'm going to do myself more harm than good. How polluted would it have to be for doing exercise to become a net negative?
That's it. That's basically it in a nutshell.
But you can't.
It's probably mixed. Depending on the climate. You know, if there's wind, or if there's if it's very calm. You know, whether the pollution is being blown away or not. But still, if you can taste this diesel, sometimes in your back of your throat, I just don't know whether it's more beneficial.
Well, you see cyclists wearing masks, don't you, for exactly that reason? Actually, when they're cycling. I mean, I don't think. I mean, I think it's unlikely we'll get an answer because it's a bit like, it's not like the speed at which a plane starts falling. It's like how much pollution would there have to be for it to be ill-advised to go out at all? I don't think exercise is going to be part of the equation, really, is it? It's just when should you stay indoors? Full stop. Sorry, question mark. When should you stay indoors? Question mark. I think, don't you? Well, I mean, it's on the board. It's on the board. So how polluted does it have to be for Ray to have a good excuse not to go on a little jog?
Well, I must admit, I do like going for walks. I do believe in the exercise. I want to do the exercise, but I don't want to be damaging myself.
No, okay. I mean, how heavily you breathe could be part of it, couldn't it? So it is going to be the how bad does it have to be when you should not go outdoors at all? Because if you're going outdoors, you're going to be walking. 12:27 is the time. It's a slight, last couple of questions. A bit left field. I like it. Let us go next to Duncan, who's in Hythe. Duncan, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's the maggots in the tackle shop.
Yes.
The second stage of a maggot's life is called a caster. It's the chrysalis stage.
Yeah, little crispy, like a little crispy chrysalis.
Particularly attractive to carp.
Are you serious? Even though it doesn't wriggle?
Deadly serious. Deadly serious. It's been a huge carp bait for years and years and years.
So you would just stick it on the hook?
Well, not really. You generally use it in carp fishing in a PVA bag, which is a soluble bag that disintegrates into the water and leaves a lovely, tasty pile of casters around your hook bait.
Do we call that ground bait? Did we used to call
just call it feed, really.
So when you toss in a handful of stuff around the hook to try and create some excitement in the fish world?
Exactly right, James.
And so you use them for that, because they smell nice, probably, underwater, and they're fish...
Less so in the chrysalis bait than they do as a maggot.
Okay, but they still do the job.
It's a bit of an ammonia smell. Yeah, they do the job magnificently, yeah.
And so if you went to a bait shop, or a tackle shop, really, and you went to the bait department, and you were buying some maggots, you wouldn't want 60% caster, would you?
No, well, it depends what your target species is. If you want to fish with maggots, you fish with maggots.
Yeah.
More often than not, if you're struggling to get a bite, caster is like the last dot go-to bait.
So you just have a few in your box?
Yeah. Well, you actually have them sealed bag frozen.
And that means they're not going to develop into flies?
Exactly that, yes. Okay. So most of the time, casters we bought frozen out of the freezer at a tackle shop.
I think you've kind of answered Nigel's question. I mean, in terms of what they do with the maggots they can't sell, I don't think that there's... I mean, they just either they turn into casters and stick them in the freezer, or they turn into flies and fly away.
I don't think many tackle shops have want a lot of flies in there, so they'd either throw them away prior to that.
They're going
to
chuck them away before they turn, aren't they?
Yeah,
I'd have thought.
A lot of carp anglers, when they go to France for like a week's on holiday, they'll actually freeze the live maggots.
Yeah.
And as they defrost, they actually do come back to life.
I've heard that, yeah. Well, I mean, if you keep them in the fridge, they go into a sort of state of...
Yeah, state of stasis almost.
Stasis is a great word, isn't it? Where do you keep them to keep them warm when you're by the riverside, Duncan?
I'm not allowed to sell that on radio, James. It would be inappropriate.
But you do, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you see. She didn't believe me. Round of applause. Well, hang on. Qualifications?
A seasoned angler.
Yeah, with a mouthful of maggots.
Well...
Tim Humphrey has the headlines.
The Defence Secretary has been accused of a shocking failure after struggling on LBC to say how many warships the UK has. John Healy confirmed the MOD has had to borrow a frigate from Germany for a NATO exercise next month. The government plans to spend £300 million more on building ships this year. Pakistan's foreign minister says indirect talks are taking place between the United States and Iran. It says the US has put forward 15 points which are being deliberated upon by Tehran. There's a warning Britain is to face weaker growth and higher inflation as a result of the war in the Middle East. The first big assessment of the economic impact of the conflict has found Britain will be the hardest hit country in the G20. LBC weather, cloudy in the north and west this afternoon, staying dry and bright in the south with a high of 11 degrees.
Hear every side of the story. LBC.
This Easter, switch your phone from home mode.
Unexpected item in the bagging area.
to unlimited data in Naples mode, so you can find the most traditional trattoria in town and translate, extra pineapple, please.
Ananas in più, per favore.
Get all the data you need abroad with no dodgy Wi-Fi, no roaming charges, and no nasty bills with an unlimited eSIM from Aerolo. Visit aerolo.com to switch on holiday mode next time you travel. Check your device compatibility.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Pain in my hip. I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Hello, I'm the new deal or no deal scratch card from the National Lottery. The banker called. He doesn't think you have what it takes to beat him. But forget that guy. Play me today and you could be one of millions of instant winners and show that mean old money grabber who the real big deal is.
Pick up the new Deal or No Deal scratch card in store today. Search Dream Big, Play Small. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Well, I never. 33 minutes after 12 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Questions that still need answers. Why do you, or possibly not you, but definitely Tom in Texas, get sunburned when he spends a few moments outside in the Texas sun? But were he to go cycling for 2 hours in identical meteorological conditions, he won't get sunburned at all. Why is that? 0345 6060 973. Kevon's aeroplane question has been satisfactorily answered by Mike. Why does Simon, one of Simon's cats eats wasps without any harm, but the other one doesn't? I think the interesting question is, why doesn't the one that does get stung? Or why hasn't the sting stopped it from doing the thing? The eating thing. Knife and fork. 0345 6060 973. We've done the maggots. I thought that was nicely handled. And we need to know at what point pollution would make exercise, outdoor exercise, suboptimal. It would make it actually worse for you. So it would be worse to exercise than it would be not to exercise. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. I don't want to turn this into a feature. Or indeed a theme, but I am struck by the message from Neil, who's in Great Chesterford, which is obviously far superior to Mere Chesterford. And he's been in touch in response to my little moment about clearing a dead rat from out the back garden. He's been in touch saying, I was asked to remove a dead otter from the roadside outside of our village last week. Good grief. By whom? And why you? I mean, do you see, I mean, what is life like in Great Chesterford, Neil, that anybody would just see a dead otter and think, I know who we'll call. We'll call Neil. There's a dead otter. Let's get Neil, who has retired. From what? I mean, where did you work before? London Zoo? West Midlands Safari Park? Then again, I also removed a drowned deer from the river last week. I mean, are you a taxidermist? So whenever people see a dead animal, they think, I know who'll fancy this. Old Neil from Great Chesterfield, retired. You know Neil, he's retired. Who would, I mean, crikey. I think I'd rather deal with a rat than an otter. Wouldn't you? Anyway, I've got one if you need one, Neil. It is 25 minutes, unless the bins, was it bins day? I can't remember. 25 to 1 is the time. Back to mystery. Tara's in Chislehurst. Tara, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Tara.
So I've got a very ordinary toothbrush with a tongue brush on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And every morning when I clean my tongue, as a lot of us do,
right,
I can barely do it for the gag reflex.
Okay.
And on other days, there's no gag reflex whatsoever. Why is that? I'm doing exactly the same thing on different days.
So sometimes you gag and sometimes you don't, and you can't work out why.
No.
That would be.
It's really bizarre. It's been bugging me for years.
All other variables are the same.
Yes. Give or take the same sort of time. You know, I do it once a day in the morning, and yeah, it's a mystery.
It certainly is. Do you? How often do you have a glass of wine of an evening?
Interesting thought. I hesitate to say most evenings, maybe just a small one.
So it's not that then. I mean, because it could be that the gag reflex is more trigger happy when you've had a few wines the night before.
Possibly.
I think that might be it.
Okay.
Does it happen in the evenings? Oh, but that doesn't count.
No, your chat asked me that. I only clean my teeth once a day generally, unless I'm going out in the evening. Then it's obviously
No idea what you've... You don't brush your teeth before bedtime, Tara.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm going mad. Of course I do. Sorry. Well, you must think I'm really manky. No, I do. I'm going mad. But I don't clean my tongue in the evening. That's the thing.
Oh, I see. You only clean your tongue in the morning.
It's a morning thing.
So you wouldn't gag on the evening brush then?
No.
Anyway. So I think it will... And I don't... Who the heck is going to be qualified to answer this question?
It must be something. I'm sure it's something medical.
I think it's alcohol. I think it's alcohol.
What? So if I've had a glass of wine the night before,
the mornings when you gag will be the mornings after the nights when you've drunk a little bit more than usual.
Oh, okay.
It's just me. I mean, I don't know anything. I don't know why you're saying it like that, like I've just delivered the flipping final verdict.
Well, it's an interesting concept. I hadn't sort of thought that far, you know.
You wouldn't, would you? I mean, but anyway, I'll put it on the board.
And I am literally cleaning my teeth in the same way every morning.
Yeah.
You know, clean my teeth and then do my tongue. Yeah, and some mornings I can barely do it because of that, the gag reflex. Other mornings, there's no gag reflex at all.
You're on. I mean, a thought for everybody having their lunch at the moment, because so far we've done gagging rodents and maggots. And also, there's a dead otter in there for good measure as well, just in case anybody's really feeling peckish. But we shall do. There it is. Today, all human life. All life. Let just humans. We've got otters here. Or death. Anyway, all right. Why does Tara gag sometimes when she's cleaning her tongue in the mornings and not at other times? And I want a proper answers only. 12:39 is the time. Tara, stay safe. Liam's in Oxford. Liam, question or answer?
I've got a question.
That's a relief. Go on.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put dizziness in the mix to go with everything else.
Oh, yes.
At what point, or
like
what happens to us to stop us enjoying the sensation of dizziness?
We've done it before, but I can't remember the answer, so we'll do it again. I love that, because, you know, it's almost impossible to believe as an adult that you used to deliberately hold a broomstick in your hand and spin around as fast as you could and then derive enormous pleasure from the giddiness that followed. Now I'd feel ill for about a day and a half after doing that. Absolutely. Or rolling down a hill, Liam. Do you remember rolling down a hill?
Well, we didn't have phones, James.
We had little choice but to roll down a hill. You'd roll down a hill and you'd do all sorts of things that were... And you just spin around with your arms out as if it was fun.
Yeah. And so you'd be laughing your head off, loving it.
Something to do with the ears.
Okay.
I think. There's some relationship between balance and ears and all that kind of thing. So it's going to be something to do with things developing, but I love it. And when roughly? Well, when do we think it was, looking back? It's before puberty, I reckon.
Yeah. I used to have a thought that it was to do, going back to football again. Having that sensation of the room spinning because you've had too many.
And once you've experienced that in real life, you've gone off the idea of finding it pleasurable.
But there'll be loads of people that have never had a drop in their life.
It's definitely an age thing. You never really see adults rolling down hills or deriving enormous pleasure from spinning around like wheels, like tops. I like that. When and why, crucially, you're allowed a double bubble question on one like that. When and why do we stop enjoying being dizzy? It is 12:41. Thank you, Liam. Paul's in Orpington. Paul, question or answer?
Question, James, please.
Carry on.
Right. Why is it
Yes.
The carbonated water, you know, like spring water, whatever else, yeah. tastes so different when carbon dioxide is tasteless, odourless.
Ah.
And even when, if you poured yourself some fizzy water and it went flat, it still tastes different when all the gas has disappeared.
Yeah. Well, I mean, does it?
Well, yeah, it does where I am.
Yeah, but does it, though? Because it's, I mean, it, there's, if it's got bubbles in it, then the effect upon your tongue is, I mean, it's hard to know what's taste and what's texture, if you see what I mean.
I'll give you that. However, when it's gone flat, it still tastes different. And there's no effect.
Different from what?
From tap water.
Yeah, but it's not tap water. Mineral water tastes different from tap water anyway. So if I poured a glass of Evian and a glass of flat Perrier, we would be able to tell the difference, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Totally. And we don't know why, do we? Has it got tiny amounts?
Asking.
No, I know. I'm doing the thing on the radio thing, all right? I'm just clarifying and recapping. I mean, it must turn into something else, I reckon.
I don't know.
I reckon you've got some carbonic acid in there. Carbonic, not carbonit.
And your qualification is?
I have a cycling proficiency from Stourport Police Station,
Circa 90. That one's always then.
That's a Ray Liotta, if ever there was one.
You know, right?
Put it on the board. Why does flat, previously fizzy water in particular, but all drinks taste different from the flat from the start drink? I think I've nailed it, but there's no earthly way I'm going to get myself a round of applause for that one. Nice one, Paul. Good question. 12:43 is the time. Lewis is in Putney. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Right, now, if people can be addicted to this programme, Lewis, as we were discussing in the first 2 hours today, I worry that you might be a case study.
Well, definitely it's a mystery. Finest hour of the day.
It is.
Out of the week.
Yes, exactly that. Go on then, what's your answer?
Sunburning cyclists.
Yes.
So, I'm a bit sceptical, but I know the phenomenon he talks of, because I'm also a cyclist and I've played a lot of sport in very sunny climes.
Yeah.
Basically, it will be on the parts of the body that are moving. So, if you think about it, the sun, like on the back of his neck, would be constant, and the intensity would sit there on his neck for 2 hours, so it would get burned. But on his legs, he's constantly moving.
Yes.
And so adjusting the angle and intensity which is hitting and where it's hitting, and also you're rotating, so you're, you know, might be turning left and right, so it might shade one leg for 10 minutes and then move around. So it's that sort of thing. So and also, the other point is, he may not get the sensation of burning because he's cycling and the wind takes the heat away along with all the sweating.
Yeah.
And so, but the UV damage would still be going in. So he should definitely wear sunscreen, as we all should.
I mean, all the time, pretty much, isn't it? My kids keep telling me this, that you should be wearing it even when there's no danger of sunburning at all.
I'm ginger and fair skinned, and I got burnt last weekend playing hockey.
Okay. So it wouldn't necessarily have burned. It's not like 2 hours later he's going to notice that his legs have gone red, but the UV would have done the damage anyway.
Potentially. Like I said, it depends on the exposure.
So it's a bit like, do you remember using a magnifying glass to burn paper at school?
Yes.
So if you were moving the magnifying glass around a lot, you would never burn any paper.
Exactly.
You need to focus on that spot through the lens until the paper starts to turn black and smoke.
Yeah, it reaches like a critical mass.
Yeah, and so when you're cycling along, the sun is not on that patch of skin for long enough to do what it would do if you were standing still or mowing the lawn, because you're going quite slowly in the same direction.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, when I play hockey, I'll do my head, neck, face, even my arms, but I'll never do my legs, and they're usually fine.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I like that. So I mean, if he cycled really, really slowly, he'd probably get sunburned.
Yeah, I think he probably would, actually.
There you go. That's next weekend sorted out for Tom. Nice one, Lewis. Qualifications?
Degree in medical genetics, and I've never been out in the sun.
That'll do, haven't we all? 12:45 is the time. Nice one, mate. I like that. 12:45. More to come after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Defence Secretary's lack of knowledge about our naval assets is a bit of a worry. Just how ready are we? And a game-changing moment for social media.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Mystery Hour on LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
12:48 is the time. We took a morning off from matters Middle Eastern, but the story that probably should concern us most involves Russia sending shipments of drones, medicine and food to Iran, even as Donald Trump sides with Russia, essentially and effectively, in the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. By sides with Russia, the latest report is that any peace deal would involve ceding territory in the Donbass, which is yet another deal that could have been written by Vladimir Putin himself. So only Donald Trump could end up essentially siding with an enemy against an ally, and then ending up watching that enemy side with another enemy against him. And you think I exaggerate this stuff? It's the front page of the Financial Times today. If you are interested in such matters, Mystery Hour continues. We've done the sunburn question, a lovely answer from Lewis. We've done the aeroplane question, a lovely answer from Mike. We don't know why cats can eat wasps without apparently coming to any harm. We've done the maggots question. We don't know how polluted a place would have to be before it would make exercising a bad idea or ill-advisable. We don't know why Tara gags when she is cleaning her tongue some mornings but not other mornings. And we don't know why we, or indeed when, we stop enjoying the sensation of being dizzy, and we don't know why flat, previously fizzy, now flat liquids taste different from flat liquids. Oh, if you can answer any of those, the number you need is 0345 6060973. Okay, so if you can answer the question about exercising in a polluted environment, gagging when you are cleaning your tongue, getting dizzy when you're young and loving it, getting dizzy when you're old and hating it, or the change in taste that a liquid undergoes when it moves from being fizzy to being flat. Why does a previously fizzy flat drink taste different from a flat... Look, water is the... Why does previously fizzy water taste very different from tap water, or indeed flat mineral water? That's the question. Why? What's happened there? It's water. It had CO2 in it, and now it doesn't. Or does it? Sarah's in Shrewsbury. Sarah, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The gagging with the toothbrush.
Carry on.
Yep. It's a subconscious reaction, as we know.
Is it?
Because she can't help it.
Yes, of course.
To throw out an unwanted object and to protect your major airway.
Ah.
this is operated by the hind brain, which is beyond your consciousness. It will just do it.
Oh, yeah.
But in order to trigger that gag reflex, it needs another factor. It will tolerate something in your mouth, provided you are at optimum oxygen levels. And I mean optimum. So if that drops even a tiny bit, it picks up in your bloodstream, the oxygen's dropped a bit, it says, get it out. Oh. And you don't get a choice in that.
That's interesting. So yeah, so you just breathe deeply and you probably wouldn't gag.
So some days I was thinking she's probably breathing more deeply without realising it.
Yeah.
And another day perhaps a bit abstracted, not. It only takes a tiny drop in oxygen because your hindbrain takes no chances with your major airway.
I like it. So I mean it's true that it would be variable. Some days it would happen and other days it wouldn't it would happen, and it would be down to how well you were breathing. So if you're stressed, you're more likely, because you'll be breathing more shallowly, you'll be more likely to gag when you're brushing your teeth. And for some people it is brushing your teeth as well that triggers it. It doesn't just have to be, because I presume you reach a bit further back with the tongue scraper than you do with the toothbrush, or it's more central, so it's more likely to trigger whatever it is that triggers.
And your hindbrain monitors that very carefully, and it's not tolerant.
I like that. Qualifications?
Retired dentist.
That'll do nicely. Thank you. Lovely. Have a round of applause, Sarah.
Thank you.
So Tara will tomorrow be presumably doing some breathing exercises before she starts doing her morning ablutions. I like that. Lovely answer. 12:52. Jonathan's in Malta. Jonathan, question or answer?
I'm back from Malta, actually, James. I'm in Chester now.
Well,
I was on holiday when I spoke to you last.
Love that. Can we change? Hang on a second, because this could get us into trouble with the data protection people. Jonathan's in he's in Chester, not Malta. Get him off the cheese. Oh, carry on, Jonathan in Chester.
So this is the water question, the taste of the water. So when you carbonate water, some of that carbon dioxide is in solution, but some of it reacts with the water to make carbonic acid. H2CO3, and what you can taste, that tangy taste,
is
carbonic acid. And even though when it's gone flat, so the CO2 that's in solution has come out of the water, you've still got the carbonic acid remaining, which you wouldn't have.
It makes perfect sense. So the carbonic acid has a taste, or a flavour, exactly. Even if carbon dioxide is tasteless.
Well, carbon dioxide isn't really tasteless, because if you put your tongue into carbon dioxide, then the carbon dioxide would create carbonic acid on your tongue.
Straight away.
But you wouldn't want to be in that carbon dioxide environment, because it would kill you. But
but how bad would it have to be before exercising?
Quite a lot.
Qualifications? Yeah.
I'm a chemical engineer.
That'll do nicely. Well played. Oh, we're ticking them off now. Well done, Jonathan. That's Paul taken care of. So just the dizziness and the exercise in pollution. We've done the sun, but have we done everything? Oh, and the cat and the stingy cat wasp question. Flo's in Brighton. Flo, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Stingy cat wasps.
Well done.
So cats are, obviously, as we know, predators. And within that, they have evolved to be insectivores. So that means that when push comes to shove, if they haven't got small mammals to predate on, then they will eat insects.
Yeah.
So a lot of cats are very adept at ripping out the stingers anyway before they eat them.
Oh, he did kind of give us a clue on that when he said he tears it to pieces before he swallows it.
Some cats are very, very good at it. I've got three, and they don't particularly go for insects, but I'm sure if they could, they would know exactly what they were doing.
And so they would leave the sting out?
Yes, they're able to rip the sting out. I mean, you find that with a lot of particularly intelligent mammals, sort of higher functioning mammals. You know, there's certain seals that will seek out jellyfish, and they know exactly what to rip out, and some of them actually quite enjoy the sting.
Yes, so in terms of Simon's two cats, the one that hasn't perfected this art is either not as hungry as the other one, or not as bright.
They might also just not like it, you know. Yeah. I don't particularly like carbonara, whereas I know my sister loves it.
Carbonara?
well, you know what I mean. It's
How can you not like...
Too many negative experiences with, I think, jar-bought stuff growing up.
No!
I like fresh stuff, but I can't do the jar stuff.
No, fair enough, but carbonara is delicious. I literally cooked it last night.
Perfect. I'm more of a tomato-based pasta kind of gal.
Oh.
But what I was going to say is, you know, it's down to personal preference. You know, with higher functioning mammals, certain creatures like certain things. You know, one of my cats likes tuna, the other doesn't.
No, fair enough. I like it.
Might have been down to having an aversion to a negative experience, something like that.
Do you want to know? I'm qualifications, got cats.
I've got three cats, always have, and I've also got a master's in animal behaviour.
You haven't always had three cats, have you?
Well, growing up, we've always had cats.
Yeah, but
But yeah, no, I have a master's in animal behaviour.
Yeah, well, that'll probably be more relevant. Have a round of applause, but don't go away.
Thank you, James.
Now, carry on. Do you want to know the secret to perfect carbonara?
Is it guanciale and egg yolk?
No.
What is it?
The secret to perfect carbonara is to get a bowl, a ceramic bowl, and to fill it with boiling water.
Okay.
And then, just as your pasta is reaching the point of being al dente, you pour the boiling water out of the ceramic bowl and dry it. And you pour the pasta into the bacon pan, and, or the guanciale, if you prefer, or the pancetta, whatever. And then you pour that into the hot ceramic bowl, and then you add the egg and parmesan mixture.
Is that emulsifying it?
Every single time it will be silky, and there won't be even the vaguest scintilla of scrambling, which is what can render a carbonara suboptimal.
I prefer tomato. I find kind of cream-based.
No, just try it. There's no cream in it. Don't put cream in it.
It's meant to be cheese and egg yolk.
Depending on how many of you there are eating, but if you were going to do a 500 gram of pasta, do two eggs and one yolk. So two full eggs, one yolk, add grated parmesan cheese until you've got like a clay-like consistency, just slightly runny clay.
Right.
And then do the hot bowl.
Hot bowl.
The hot bowl! Flow.
Okay, good idea. I like it. I like science.
And then you will change your view of carbonara for the rest of your life, and you can have that. You can have that for nothing on me. It is absolutely foolproof. She had a round of applause. Cameron's in Bolton. Cameron, question or answer?
It's an answer, mate.
Carry on.
So it's to do with the dizziness.
Yes.
I'm no expert. I've heard it on here before, though. So I do remember.
Fair enough. Go on. Is that it?
No. So basically, as you get older, there's a liquid in your ear. And as you get older, it gets more viscous. So it's not like you get to a certain age and then you don't like being dizzy. It's that as you get older, it gets more and more viscous.
And it reaches a point of viscosity, at which point it becomes really uncomfortable to be dizzy.
Yeah, and it's harder for it to settle, which is why it feels worse. And then there's like the associated factors of like your dizziness. As you get older, you're more aware of the dangers of if you fall over or whatever.
Yeah, so there's a bit of evolution. There's a little qualifications?
Long time listener.
That'll do nicely.
Cheers, mate.
No, thank you. Favourite, crikey. Well, I don't know who my favourite. Have you got a favourite this week? I haven't really been thinking about favourites, cats. So let's give it to Simon with the wasps question. Or no, actually, give it to Simon with the wasps question. Can we play the full thing? Can we play the him and then him in one go? Because this is, I think, probably, I've got a horrible feeling that my career peaked today on the programme, and that after this moment, the only way is down.
JD is involved, and Marco is involved, and Jared Kushner is involved, very smart guy, and Steve Witkoff, smart guy, is involved, and I'm involved.
And that is it. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app, or you can stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts. Someone wasn't listening earlier. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Storbeck will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I think your career high was after that, which is while I was sitting here and you said, yeah, a bit of evolution there, yeah. Expert, my eye. That was hilarious. Thank you very much indeed. At 3 today, a jury in LA may well have just changed the world in a way. It ruled Instagram and YouTube are addictive and that their owners are negligent in the safeguarding of children. Tell us something we didn't know. So what now? What flows from that now? We'll talk about it at 3. Going to start, though, with the excruciating moment this morning with Nick on Breakfast for the Defence Secretary, John Healey. I mean, I've had job interviews that felt similar to that, and it's not a nice feeling, is it? Worrying, though, that Healey's shocking lack of knowledge about our naval assets, including where they are, is where we are. The Prime Minister reassures us that they're preparing and ready for this war we're in. We're in it. Are you confident?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Defence Secretary has told LBC the UK is in a similar situation to many other countries when it comes to the availability of warships.
Well, every nation, with every piece of its military kit, has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
It's after John Healey struggled to tell Nick Ferrari how many ships are available to the Royal Navy.
We have 17 frigates and destroyers.
Defence sources have told us that number was right when Labour came to power. Mr Healey's confirmed the UK is borrowing a frigate from Germany for a NATO exercise next month. Former political editor at The Sun, Trevor Kavanagh, told LBC Mr Healey's response was very telling.
He had nothing to say, nothing to offer, no weapons to offer, no ships. And it doesn't even know where they are. The ones that the 17 frigates that he claimed we had at our disposal, where are they? He couldn't say.
Pakistan says indirect talks are taking place between the US and Iran. International finance experts are warning the UK will see the biggest economic hit among G7 countries as a result of the conflict. A man has been jailed for 18 years for the manslaughter of a mother of two whose body was discovered in woodland in Coventry. 42-year-old Mohamed Dernian said Rianne Coulson died from an overdose, but prosecutors told the court he strangled her last May. He was cleared of her murder yesterday. The chief executive of government savings bank NSNI is being replaced. Dax Harkins is paying the price for a series of errors dating back years, with some bereaved families saying they didn't receive money that was rightfully theirs. Former HMRC head Sir Jim Harrer is taking over on an interim basis. A landmark trial has led the Prime Minister to say he's very keen to tackle the addictive features of social media. A jury yesterday ruled Google and Meta were responsible for a young woman getting addicted on the platforms, but the two companies are appealing the verdict. The ruling was also welcomed by the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, who have called it a reckoning. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 137 points at 99.70. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.16. And the LBC weather, cloudy in the north and west this afternoon. It should stay dry and bright in the south with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Maria wasn't mastering the art of macaron in Paris by accident. She booked a baking class on Get Your Guide. Fate didn't have the Brooks sipping matcha with a real tea master in Tokyo. They booked that on Get Your Guide too. And luck didn't have John learning the difference between bow and stern on a Majorcan boat cruise. You guessed it, Get Your Guide. The best parts of travel don't just happen. You make them happen with Get Your Guide. Book forward to it.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We have heard this week alone, haven't we, two significant sets of statements, really, from the Chancellor and the Prime Minister about the preparations, the securing of our economy with the war that's going on in the Middle East. Of course, we are involved in that war, whether we like it or not, in a very particular way, but we are involved in that war very definitely. But it was the words of John Healey, the Defence Secretary, this morning that I think will be remembered this week when we think of government preparedness and clarity over what Britain's position is in all of this and readiness is for all of this. Speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast, the Defence Secretary, John Healey, was asked about the operation next month, which will see British Royal Naval Command on a German ship, because we didn't have one available.
You know, first and foremost, that's a sign of the strength of NATO alliance. It's why that we defend, we train, we fight together with allies. But I'm not happy with the situation we have with British warships. And that's because it takes six years to build a warship, I tell you. You know, in the past 14 years of previous governments, they cut the number of frigates and destroyers by a quarter. They cut the number of mine-hunting ships by a half. They cut the defence budget by £12 billion in the first 5 years. We're starting to fix these problems. We can't do that overnight. But the fact that we're spending £300 million more on British shipbuilding this year is a sign that we're beginning to turn things round.
How many frigates do we have in the fleet?
We have 17 frigates and destroyers. It's down from 23 at the end of the last Labour government. And as I say, the number of mine hunters have been cut by more than half. And so that we can meet not just the threats we face now, but the threats in the future, we're doubling down on some of the uncrewed mine hunting capabilities. And I have some of them already pre-positioned in the Middle East. But we can't turn this round overnight. We're putting the investment in now that will help us fix this.
But if we've got a fleet of 17,
years,
Mr. Healy, if we've got a fleet of 17 in total, where are they all?
Well, every nation with every piece of its military kit has some in operation, some on deployment, some in states of readiness, some being repaired and maintained.
We only have
it's
one in operation.
Regular rhythm that is common to military planning.
We only have HMS Dragon in operation down there now. Where are all the other? Are all the others being repaired in some way, shape, or form?
I'm proud of what we're able to do. I'm proud of the fact that the forces we've got have risen to the challenges in the Middle East.
I know, sir, but are the others? Are they all being repaired, or is there some? Are they not functioning correctly? 17 vessels. We would have known for months that we were heading this operation in April. Why did it not occur to someone, well, we're going to need one of our warships because we're commanding the operation in April. Let's make sure it's available. Why did that not occur to anyone?
We were preparing Dragon for that flagship role.
So we have one warship available because Dragon had to go, obviously, down to Cyprus.
I have to make decisions based on what we've got. We were preparing Dragon in order to play that flagship role.
Well, that was the Defence Secretary with John Healy earlier on, as you know. Marc Francois joins me, Shadow Armed Forces Minister and Conservative MP for Rayleigh and Wickford. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Do you know how many frigates we have?
We have 13 service escorts, not 17. Unfortunately, the Defence Secretary doesn't know the size of his own navy.
Is service escorts another word for frigate? I don't.
Right, let me explain. We have 6 Type 45 destroyers. We have 7 Type 23 frigates. The others have been retired from service. So in terms of the ones that are still in service and can fight, the total is 13. We're shortly to go down to 12 because there's a strong rumour that HMS Richmond, which is one of the Type 23s, will be retired. HMS Lancaster, which was a Type 23 on what was called the Armilla Patrol. We've always had for years a escort in the Gulf. Labour withdrew her and she has now been retired. So we're down to 13. And the rumour is when they retire Richmond, if they do, and that looks likely, because some of these Type 23s are 30 years old. They're failing their MOT, basically, and then we'll be down to 12. And it would be nice to have a Defence Secretary who knew the size of his own navy. The problem is he doesn't actually run the Ministry of Defence.
Be honest with me, did you gen up on that this morning after he made his terrible gaffe?
I knew that already because my father...